This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this college football championship Monday evening, as always, as it were, as Paul would say. And, of course, joining me as always is my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 477 of the longest-running motherfucking gold-dended and all the episodes, as tonight we are live from the... as I call it, the Bunt Pan in down in Atlanta, the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, because of the weird way that they do their retractable roof kind of turns. It's kind of neat, actually. And that's where they are tonight for the Tide and
fitting.
Mr. Campbell.
It's like a toilet bowl that's flushing.
I was going to say Mr. Campbell and Mr. Duke's Dogs against Mr. Phillips' Tide for the national championship. We'll keep tabs on that. But good evening, JR. Always a pleasure, sir. We are nowhere near Atlanta, Georgia tonight. Although it's pretty interesting because one of the other house shows tonight is there. Oh. So we'll get to that in a minute. But first, when we bring
Synergy,
our,
we waited Synergy, just in case Georgia made this game tonight, so we could
because that worked.
We timed it out.
Yep, bringing the third member of our Trident.
Is that what it's better than a tripod?
Yes.
I guess. So he is one of our regular guests here, our rotating panel of all stars. He made bad ninth, but he's still on that panel of all stars. That, of course, the one and only Mr. John D'Amato. Johnny, how are you?
Thanks a lot. Trident, you're trying to say a bad breath or something? I'll keep that in mind before our next date.
We'll say you're batting ninth on the Yankees, not the Mets. So that's like a good ninth.
Oh my God! Let me tell you something. Earlier today I had yes on because I never watched the Yankeeography Dave Winfield, which was on today, and it was pretty good. But oh my God, the promo—they're just ridiculous. I mean, it's out of control now. Usually the Yankee promos on Yes are obnoxious.
It's the network. What do you want them to promote?
Forget it. What?
What do you want them to promote? It's the Yankee Network.
No, but it's one thing to just promote like the games, but this is just crazy. It's like Judge, Sanchez, Bird, Stanton, TD. It's like the rest of the lineup is trash now.
Come on.
Now that you're there, you're going to go 160.
Someday you're going to get a big player like that, and you'll understand what the hype is all about. I get it. It's okay.
It's okay. You don't like being hated, but you kind of like being hated. So you don't know which side to fly on.
Whatever.
You like to be hated, and you don't like to be hated.
Whatever. D'Amato hates it all anyway, right, D'Amato?
He does.
Maybe we can listen to opening day on the drive down to New Orleans, John. Yankee opening day. I'll throw it on the radio.
Told you're gonna love that ride, John. Anyway, you get to listen to John Sterling for what? Too bad they don't do encores in radio.
Nice long extra inning game. Take us right through West Virginia.
Torture.
It's 8 o'clock game too. Listen to get lucky. It's the 8 o'clock game. Anyway, speaking of New York, we are there tonight, of course, because it is August 22nd, 1987. And we are on the big building on 33rd Avenue, otherwise known as Madison Square Garden in New York City, for our fourth straight Madison Square Garden house show. We haven't had any pay-per-views or anything, nothing breaking the summer.
I will say this. It seemed more daunting when we first mentioned that this was coming, and they've actually not been nearly as awful as I expected them to be. So that's been a plus.
No, it is a plus. Like, the May and June were a little, but July show was exceptional, and I have a feeling we're having a good show tonight as well. Mm. Now, in terms of the rest of the roster, I think for the first time, and we keep talking about this, I think for the first time, Vince kind of knew what to do with the roster, and it's actually very well displaced, and the matches on our show tonight, I think, prove that. But as we mentioned, the college football national championship game is in Atlanta. One third of the roster on this August evening was in Atlanta at the Omni How about that? So no, both the other two-thirds of the roster tonight, not in podunk towns like they've been the last couple of shows. They're in some pretty big places. So, yeah, they were at the Omni in Atlanta, but think of this crowd, only 2,200 at the Omni. Now, the Omni's a regular, you know, arena. The Hawks played there, and so it's a normal, you know, 14, 15,000-seat venue, but only 2,200 were at the Omni for this house show. Here was the card. Holy cow. David Sammartino pinned Terry Gibbs.
Jeez.
Bubba Butt was still there?
I don't know if he was still there. I'm guessing they brought him back, probably, is my guess. There's no way he's been there for 2 years.
Yeah. SD Jodes pinned Frenchie Martin. No wonder there were only 2,200 people in this show. Outback Jack pinned Tiger Chung Lee. Oh boy. Lord. Not exactly the NWA hotbed.
Tiger Lee Chung.
Tiger Lee Chung. Jake Roberts defeated King Kong Bundy by countout. Nikolai Volkoff pinned Joe Murto. Oh, wow. Paul Orndorff, who subbed for Ken Patera, pinned King Harley Race after Patera hit Race with his arm cast. Bobby Heenan was handcuffed to Mr. T for the duration of the bout. So that might have been pretty interesting. Paul Roma, for the 800th time this summer, Paul Roma and Jim Powers defeated The Shadows. And the main event, Coco Beware pinned Danny Davis with the Ghostbuster. Mr. T was the guest referee. So Big T was all over the show.
Yeah,
this was trying to get 2,200 people here. The other half of the – or the other third of the roster was actually in another big East Coast hotbed. They were at the Cap Center in Landover. So a pretty busy Saturday night in the World Wrestling Federation. 15,000 jammed the Cap Center for this show, and this one actually is pretty good. Iron Mike Sharp defeated Jerry Allen. Barry – look at this tag match. This is right up D'Amato's alley. Barry Horowitz and Steve Lombardi defeated Stevie Offie and Brady Boone.
Jeez. I miss Stevie Offie. Remember that?
You know, remember him? A main event anywhere in the world. Don Morocco beat Bob Orton Jr. Ted DiBiase. To some other guy that we'll be debuting. Do we even mention him yet? I don't think we've mentioned him. Have we mentioned him in the vignettes? I think we have mentioned him.
I think we have.
Okay, so Ted DiBiase makes an appearance here at the Cap Center, and he beats Davey Boy Smith. Interesting. Brutus Beefcake defeated Greg Valentine via disqualification when Johnny V interfered. For the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships, the Hart Foundation defeated Kamala and Sika. And in the main event...
That's a weird heel match.
It was a very weird heel match. But in the main event, Hulk Hogan successfully defends the World Wrestling Federation Championship against Killer Khan in a Mongolian stretcher match.
Hmm.
So, not a bad little card at the Cap Center.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Better than that pile of crap.
Pretty good.
The Omni.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, they're obviously running three different crews on this night, so that's... you had to thin it out at some point.
Exactly. The Omni fans get stuck with the Shadows, which, of course, is Randy Cully and Jose Luis Rivera. So, all right, JR, what do we have for the rest of the notes?
Quite a few, as always. Thank you to Mr. Greenhouse. Here's what's gone down since our July 25th MSG visit. And the 8-1 Superstar Billy Graham, defeated Butch Reed with Slick in a pose down. Before the result of the contest was revealed, Reed and Slick attacked Graham, focusing on his hip, until Graham cleared Reed out of the ring. Gene Okerlund was the MC for that event. And then Hercules, Harley Race, and Rick Rude defeated Mario Mancini, Ricky Hunter, and Jerry Allen when Rude pinned Hunter. That was Rude's official TV debut following the MSG debut we talked about on our last show. The next week on Superstars, Tito Santana, JYD, and Hillbilly, Jim defeated Don Morocco, Bob Orton, and Joe Murto when Santana pinned Morocco after Orton pushed Morocco over as he attempted to do a superplex, with Santana falling on top after Orton had earlier attempted Morocco's tombstone. After the bell, Morocco and Orton fought into the crowd. This would be the official split between the two. On 8:15, interview segment with Bobby Heenan and Rick Rude, Heenan said he would bring Paul Orndorff out the following week to say Rude had the superior body. And Rick Martel defeated Barry Horowitz with a crossbody from the middle rope after the bout. The Islanders attacked him until Tito Santana, who had been doing guest commentary at the Spanish announce table, made the save. And on 8:22, Bobby Heenan was fired by Paul Orndorff, with Orndorff introducing his brand new manager, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, during an interview with Craig DeGeorge. Heenan expected Orndorff to admit Rude had the better body, but he did not. DeGeorge then interviewed Rick Martel and Tito Santana, where they said they'd be forming a new team known as Strike Force. They're going to strike with force. And Ken Patera defeated Tom Stone at 2:08 with an elbow drop. Moments after Patera hit the power slam, he injured his arm while attempting the power slam and sidelined for 2 months as a result. So a lot going on here leading up to the show.
Okay. And we are in the garden. Our announcers are, of course, Gorilla Monsoon and Lord Alfred Hayes. But a new gentleman will be joining us later in the show, JR, in the table. Who will that be?
We'll talk about it when we get there. How about that?
Talk about it when we get there? Okay. Okay. Let's put it this way. He's royalty in any event. Let's dive in. Our first match of the evening is...
Yes. Scott Casey taking on Islander Tama. Scott Casey is a newcomer, born March 19th, 1947, in Amarillo, Texas. Began wrestling in 1970. His early career was spent 9 years of that in Joe Blanchard's Southwest Championship Wrestling on August 30th, 83, defeated Adrian Adonis to win the world title there. A month later, on 9/11, defeated Tully Blanchard to win the Southwest Heavyweight title. In September, Casey also held the Southwest Tag Titles with Buddy Marino, replacing the injured Bobby Jaggers. Left SCW, went to World Class, managed by Sunshine. Casey and Sunshine also brought in Great Kabuki in a feud with Jim Cornette and Midnight Express. Kabuki later turned on them. John Tatum and Missy Hyatt also showed up to work a program. Left World Class in the middle of the program to enter the WWF in mid-1987. That brings us here for his MSG debut. Tama going solo this month. The Islanders have been set up really well on the heel side of the division. Al calls Casey a fine young athlete, but he looks, to me, old and ragged. I don't think he looked young at all. No Bobby tonight with Tama. He's going it alone. Al wonders how he'll do. Tama has a great smirk going, such a dick. Tama stalls in place of the crowd a bit, and then we finally get a lockup, which Casey wins. Tama bitches about a hair pull, and they lock up again, and we get some more back and forth early on. Casey eventually lands a dropkick that sends Tama flying. Tama slowly comes back in, but Casey comes right at him and threatens to punch, but Tama cranks him with a great sneaky low blow to take over. Tama shoots Casey to the corner, but Casey dodges a charge and runs shoulder first to the post. Casey then follows the shoulder breaker, starts to work over the joint. Casey switches to a chin lock, but Tama fights to his feet and forces a break. Casey boots him down and starts to work the arm and shoulder again, but Tama twists free and takes over control, going to a chin lock and using the ropes for leverage. Tama buries a pair of back elbows for a near fall and keeps choking away before throwing him to the floor. Casey climbs back up, but Tama knocks him right back down, and then Tama goes to a trap hold as Gorilla says he should be working the leg due to Casey's build, not the arm. Casey breaks free and clubs Tama on the back of the head, follows a nice stiff pile driver to a pop and a two count. Casey then unloads some right hands but whiffs on a charge to the corner. Tama slams him down and hits a splash off the second rope for the win. Solid match here. I thought Tama is so awesome as a heel. We talk about it every week, but he's fantastic. And Casey was feisty enough, especially at the end. I like the pile driver and his final flurry. Solid opener. A lot of this on the back of Tama, but I thought Casey hung with him. I went a star and a half on this one. What do you think, Scott?
I also went a star and a half. Your match time is 11:23. Obviously, Tama, you know, got the benefit of a pretty damn good opponent last month in Rick Martel. Scott Casey's not chopped liver. He's just not Rick Martel. So this was a good test for Tama to be a true heel dictator of offense and pace against, you know, not a guy who's not inexperienced, but certainly not a, you know, not a Rick Martel. Again, he kept working the heel mannerisms. He's very vocal. He's very vocal. He's kind of like Flair. He's very, very animated and vocal in his.
I definitely think of
Rick
Flair when I think of Scott Casey. Or you're talking about Tama.
No, I'm talking about Tama. Okay. No. The fact that he's very, like, he goes, oh, you know, like he makes a lot of noises when he's getting cranked and stuff.
But I do think of Flair Scott Casey, like, because Scott Casey looks like Ric Flair 2016.
It's terrible. But I mean, otherwise, I thought the match was fine. I thought it was paced well. Crowd is a little frisky tonight, which is good. They had a good show last month, and I have a feeling they think a good one is ahead of them this evening. Not horrible. Tama's still, again, very young. So, you know, he did his best to dictate the match. But I thought it was fine. And, you know, Scott Casey's not, again, he's not Chop Liver. He's not Martel, but he's, you know, he's not Jose Luis Rivera either. So a good opener, Johnny. A star and a half. And Tama's definitely settling in. To being a good bad guy.
30 for 30, like we, Scott Casey.
Like we saw before with Sam Houston's debut and Dick Slater at the Garden, New York is not kind to the Texans. As Casey just walks in with his boots and a foot, and he's just out of place. And for the first match, for a face to get booed like that, you know, the crowd didn't welcome him warm at all. And Casey was definitely out of place. He's out of place in his podcast. He belongs on the Worldcast podcast. And but like you guys said, Tama just a heel 101. All his mannerisms and yelling at the crowd and yelling at the ref. Just great. I just wonder why Tommy, the finisher, was only off the second rope. Usually does that. He gets some altitude off the top rope, and here it was kind of a half-ass off the second rope.
That's all he needed for this bum. That's not...
Yeah, but the crowd did pop. Casey whipped out of nowhere. Casey whipped out a nice pile driver, kind of like Orndorff, and the crowd really perked up because the pile driver was still over as a big move. And in the middle of the match, Casey just whips out a nice one. That was like the highlight of the match for him.
Maybe he's not Ric Flair then. If he's whipping something out, it's a pile driver.
That was for that shiny threw a softball there.
No, the pile driver was really nice. He really drilled him with it.
The mic. Yeah, because the crowd wasn't really into anything, and that really stirred him up. So that was about the highlight of the match for me.
All right.
Yeah, I was surprised the pile driver came out as well. I thought it added a little something extra to the end, but.
Agreed. I like that. Right. I thought that was the best part of the match, honestly. Well, at least on Casey's end.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to our next match then, and we'll move right along here to match number two, and that is Tito Santana taking on the Outlaw Ron Bass, a rematch. Not a rematch, but a match that stemmed from last show when Bass attacked Santana and beat him down on the floor. And that brings us to this one here. Big match. Tito looking for revenge. Bass has really quickly made a name for himself at the Garden between the attack on Tito and then the stuff with Gorilla, which we get more of tonight, where he exchanges words with Gorilla again when he heads out and then he's drawing with the fans. Tito jumps Bass as he gets in the ring and unloads with a hot flurry before Bass can even get his vest off. Tito's peppering away and knocks him to the floor. Tito follows him out, chucks a chair at him as the crowd is just all revved up for this one. Back inside, Bass begs off, but Tito comes right at him, punches and stomps away as Bass is a staggering, just a mess. Tito grabs a chair and then the whip as the ref tries to back him off while Bass regroups. Bass returns and Tito meets him with another flurry and then hits a flying fist to the head and instead of covering, just keeps slamming his head over and over to the mat. Tito finally covers but picks Bass up at two to a pop. Bass gets tangled in the ropes and Tito hammers him but the ref helps free the outlaw and he goes back to the outside to shake off the cobwebs. Bass finds a random object on the floor and grabs hold of it and punches Tito in the gut to cut him off. Bass pelts him in the face and then chucks it. And then Bass goes up top, but Tito pops up and slams him and drops a hard knee for two. Tito just pounds away and grabs a tight front face lock and grinds him down. Bass powers out and slings Tito hard to the floor. Outside, Bass ramps Tito to the post and crotches him on the guardrail as the crowd tries to rally him. Bass heads back inside as Tito peels himself up, but Outlaw meets him on the apron and slams him to the buckle and cracks him with right hands. Al gives Bass props for making a comeback after the early beating, and then Bass starts to lay in some elbows and gets a one count and then a two on a suplex as Gorilla's just ripping his lazy pin attempts. Bass follows a pile driver but doesn't get all of it, which Gorilla and Al point out. Tito blocks a suplex and gets one of his own, but Bass comes back with a headbutt. Al then says that was a stupid move that hurts Bass just as much. Bass grabs a chin lock and then turns into a head scissors and wiggles all around the ring to use the ropes as leverage. Tito twists free as Gorilla wonders how that Latin blood is starting to flow. Bass maintains control, but Tito catches him with a running forearm to the jaw and then comes back firing at him. Tito misses a hard charge to the corner, falls to the mat as Bass goes to a chin lock. Al says Bass is like Greg Valentine. He takes time to really get warmed up. Tito punches his way free and sends Bass over with a backdrop and then goes to the figure four, but Bass kicks him free. Things head outside where they trade blows until Bass throws him into the post. Back inside, Bass shoots Tito into the ropes, but Tito comes back with the flying forearm, which knocks Bass outside to the floor just as the bell rings for the draw. Tito demands 5 more minutes. Bass teases coming back, but he begs off. This is a great brawl, loaded with heat, hard offense. Tito was amazing in the opening segment, dominating Bass, just beating the piss out of him. Bass was really good in control, too, and I didn't mind the finish because these guys just went to war and ran out of time. Like, they weren't a lot of these draws you get, they're filling time and just trying to get the 20 minutes. This did not feel like that at all. This was just like these guys just couldn't stop beating the shit out of each other enough to have enough time for the win. So I didn't mind the draw. Bass has been impressive so far, I thought, and Tito's awesome as always. So, John, I went 3 stars on this. Kind of a hidden gem, this one I did not expect when it first rolled out there.
Yeah, definitely. This is one of those house show feuds that you didn't really see anything on the syndicated shows putting up these two. Just basically, oh, these two are gonna fight. But this was a nice little feud that kind of slipped through the cracks. And just Outlaw Ron Bass, you could tell he just loves playing the heel. The way he comes to the crowd, messing with Gorilla. As a matter of fact, Vladimir, the great Vladimir, gets right in his face and gives him some of the business. And Tito just shows great fire. They didn't really have anything for Tito until Strikeforce came about.
Right.
But Tito makes the best of everything, and even though you give him Outlaw Ron Bass, he makes him look like a star. And just the only thing the match slowed down a little when Bass is on the offensive. His offense is a little slow and methodical, and the spot where he grabs the object, he like telegraphs it, and there was really nothing original about that. And the Gorilla and Al were chiding Bass with some good ones, when Bass tried to go to the top rope, Lord says, "Bass is moving like a tortoise." that was one of my favorite lines. But then again, they threw him a nice compliment where they threw the hammer compliment. They say, "Oh, he gets better 15 minutes of that." That was a surprise. So. But yeah, this is a hidden gem. I really liked it.
Yeah, your official time, they were close this time around, 19:45, so about 15 seconds shy of the 20 minutes, or 15 minutes shy of the 20 minutes. I think the best part of this match, and I think this is a credit to both guys in different ways, it was just very physical, like you said, JR, just a fist fight. And Tito's good at selling, just getting punched and mm-hmm. beaten down physically. And with Ron Bass, what else you want? That's what he's best at. He's best at being a blunt force object. There's a lot of those guys on this show tonight. And this match, to me, backs up what I was saying earlier about how finally I feel like this is the first time, as we comment on it a lot, about Vince splitting the roster into three. A lot of times he overloads one city, and then the Garden gets gypped or the other city gets gypped. On this night, yeah, two of the three major belts are in one city. The world title and the tag belts were down in D.C. But this show, I think you've got a great combination, finally, of guys, and we're booked properly. I mean, this was a great matchup to have. That, like you said, JR, comes out of nowhere. And when you look on this card and you're thinking of which match to put a draw towards, this isn't the one you think of. There's a few others, maybe the one coming up in a couple matches. But Tito did a great job of selling, which obviously he's a pro at. I mean, we go back to the Valentine feud 2 years ago, and he was great at getting pummeled by him too. And Ron Bass just knows how to fight. I mean, it's a guy that, you know, worked the Southern Territories, NWA, World Class, you know, Mid-Atlantic. Just knows how to fight. So this was a perfect combination, a guy who takes a good shit kicking versus a guy who gives a good shit kicking. And like you said, this was finally one of those. It wasn't like that Hercules Billy Jack draw where it felt like they were looking up at the clock and waiting, oh, Jesus, there's 9 minutes left of this shit.
Right, yeah, no, it never felt like that.
No, they literally just were beating the crap out of each other until the bell had to ring. And that was great. That's the kind of draws you want to have. I mean, as much as draws suck, obviously. If you're going to have a draw, you might as well have one where the guys just forget about pinning each other and just are beating the shit out of each other till the bell rings. So that's what made this match really, really good. I want another one out of these guys. I'd like to see a multi-show feud.
Yeah.
I put these guys in a cage or something. Why not? You know, just let them go at it. So I was very impressed. 3.5 stars. I think I gave them an extra half star than you did, Alyssa Jerry. Yep, yeah, I gave it 3.5. Yeah. I did 3.5. It was really, really good.
This is where the quarter thing kind of hurts us a little bit. A lot of these matches we've talked about the last couple weeks, I feel like I've been a little bit lower. But I probably would have been more in that like 3.25 range. Like this was
right.
Better than the 3 stars. But 3.5 is kind of my demarcation of like a super memorable match. You know what I mean? Like not super – all right, I shouldn't say super memorable, but memorable. Like to me, under 3.5 is like – it could be really good, but you're probably not going to remember it. Like to me, this isn't a match that's going to like go down as like, oh, that Tito Bass match. I mean, it may, but it's not really remembered. It was just kind of recently found, at least by us. And I know others kind of discovered along the way, like Pete mentioned, it was kind of a hot find when they did the 80 set. So that's kind of my demarcation point. So I just don't think it quite reached there, but it was really, really good. It was definitely over 3, but
yeah, I think you and I are like that in the opposites. Like I may overgrade a match a quarter star, you may undergrade a match a quarter star, but that's fine. Either way, again, I mean, you're talking about a match that came literally out of nowhere, and I want to reward it because it particularly for Ron Bass, because you know everyone thinks he's a typical big Southern, you know, flunky who just punches and kicks, but I mean he really brought the goods here, and it was a well psychologically built match in that aspect where, well, we weren't looking for flips and stuff. We were looking for two guys, you know, Tito to try to get out of the way of the blunt force object. And for most of the match, he didn't. He survived it, as a matter of fact, is what it felt like. But again, fell short of the full 20. They were 15 minutes shy of. They're way off, but that's all right. In any event, we have a draw, and I want to see more out of these guys. I didn't check and see. I didn't cheat ahead to see if September has them in a rematch, but they should rematch.
No, they don't.
Nah, that sucks because
It was bad timing because, like John said, they were just trying to fill time for Tito.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why they do the draw here. I think, you know, Bass wasn't really ready for a loss, and Tito was obviously set for bigger things that we'll see later tonight. So yeah, we couldn't quite get there, but
exactly. And Tito gets himself set up in a few minutes. In a few minutes anyway. So great match. You're right. I would say memorable, but I think the best part of
it was really
one of the great things. Yeah, and one of the great things about us doing our refresh is that we're finding these gems for people to find. It's fantastic. I highly recommend finding it if you can. Really a great match.
Yeah, and I believe it was Pete who had said that the 80s DVDR set that they discovered this match and were like, it was like one of the hottest finds they found when they were going through the footage. So.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, let's go to our next match, which is a title match featuring our brand new women's champion. We talked about that last week, and that is Sensational Sherri, born Sherri Russell in Birmingham, Alabama, February 8th, 1958. Martel first introduced to professional wrestling as a child. Mother took her to shows in Mississippi. 1974, approached Grizzly Smith for advice to become a wrestler. He questioned her and told her to come back in 5 years when she was an adult. Eventually married her second husband, gave birth to a son, but soon divorced. During that time, she became interested in becoming a wrestler again. Sought training from Butch Moore in Memphis, Tennessee. Started wrestling as Sherri Martine, but decided she needed more training. Continues to train with the Fabulous Moolah. Moolah changed her name to Sherri Martel and sent her to wrestle in Japan in 1981. Moolah claims that Martel frequented nightclubs and liked to party, which resulted in Moolah kicking her out of the school. I'm guessing maybe it was the opposite. She just didn't want to go down on the Fabulous one. After leaving the school, she traveled back to Tennessee. In Memphis, she was managed by Jim Cornette. During a mixed tag battle royal, Martel suffered an injury that removed her temporarily from the business. Worked as a wrestler and manager to the Heavenly Bodies, Pat Rose and Tom Pritchard. After recovering, Larry Zbyszko helped her join the AWA and eventually debuted there in 1985 at Superclash in Chicago, defeating Candy Devine for the women's title. Traded the belt with Devine, and on June 28, 86, at the Battle at the Bay, by the Bay, Martel defeated Devine to win the title for the third and final time. Held on to it briefly before vacating it. During that time, in addition to wrestling, Martel acted as the manager for the team of Playboy Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. Managed them to the tag titles and a feud with the Rockers. And after former AWA wrestler Jesse Ventura referred her to WWF, she debuted on July 24th, 1987, defeating Moolah for the title. So that was her actual debut match where she won the belt. So big push for Sherri out of the gate. And here she's taking on Velvet McIntyre, who's still hanging around the mix, picking up another crack at the gold here. Sherri stalls a bit and jaws at the ref. Velvet jumps her after the bell. Starts to unload a flurry, sending her careening to the floor after a clothesline. Velvet yanks her in by the hair and grabs a near fall as our commentary has dropped out. Velvet grabs a front face lock and twists into a cover, but two by going to the arm. The commentary returns as Sherri chucks Velvet by the hair to break free. Velvet comes back and goes to a wrist lock and takes the champ down. And Sherri starts to claw and uses the hair to take over and then chokes Velvet on the top rope. Velvet gets a double leg takedown, a jackknife cover for two, and then slams Sherry's face to the mat. Velvet grabs a surfboard, but Sherri busts free and again starts to choke away. Gorilla demands the ref be more assertive in there as Velvet comes back with a crossbody for two. Velvet slams her down and gets a sloppy sunset flip off the middle rope for two. Sherri goes to the chin lock and releases and slams Velvet, and Sherri then puts her in the middle buckle and chucks her to the mat. The challenger bails outside to regroup, but Sherri grabs her from the ring and chokes. Velvet returns and blocks a charge with her knees, lays in some one-footed drop kicks that knock the champ to the floor. Velvet slides out, but just cracks Sherri with a stiff slap to the jaw in a nice spot. Sherri then staggers back in, but Velvet twists her into a pin cover, but can't put her away. Velvet's gotten real stiff at this point. She does rolling body scissors into a pin cover, but the ref is slow to count and pisses off Gorilla. Sherri goes to the hair and spikes Velvet down and chokes her as Gorilla and Al give the ref more shit. Velvet recovers and goes back to work with a kick to the gut and a giant swing and a big splash. Velvet goes for a reverse cross body, but Sherri dodges it. Velvet comes back and catches her on the middle rope and slams her down for two. Velvet argues with the ref, which allows Sherri to hit a back suplex for the win. Are really feisty and a bit fun, all thanks to Velvet. I didn't think Sherri did anything. I thought she looked soft here, winning how she did. Velvet was aggressive and fluid on point. She had some nice cohesive offense with some snap to it. I love that slap on the floor. Like, that was really aggressive. I thought she was really impressive and deserved a push here if she kept working like this. I don't know where this Velvet's been. Sherry was fine, but I thought Velvet completely outworked her in this one. And I went a star and a half, pretty much all in the back of Velvet.
Your match time, 14:21, which didn't seem that long at all. I actually gave it 2 stars. This is probably a case where maybe we give it like a star and 3/4 if we were doing quarters. Because I agree with you 100%. I think this was more a vindication of Velvet McIntyre as a better wrestler than people thought, instead of as compared to everyone seeing this great worker in Sherry, who is a good worker. But sadly, everything we've ever seen of Velvet McIntyre to this point is that dreck at WrestleMania 2, and then one or two matches we've seen on, like, you know, maybe a house show here or whatever, and maybe some superstars or challenge or something, and it just looks awful because her opponents stink. But I think Sherry motivated Velvet here, and I didn't think they were going to get – when I first checked the time, I'm like, wow, they gave him 14 minutes? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it was a good 14 minutes, and she really pushed herself. I think deep down this was an opportunity for Velvet McIntyre to prove that she's a pretty good worker. Because, again, I think the national stage, all we saw of her is that ludicrous 40-second shit in Chicago at WrestleMania 2. And otherwise, maybe, again, a match here and there. But she really brought the goods here. She was physical. She mm-hmm. was aggressive.
Yeah.
And I think Sherry got taken aback by this. And I think that's why she came off as
she
soft.
Really passive. Like, Velvet just carried the whole match. Sherry just was not aggressive at all. And I would like to see this Velvet versus the Judy Martin when she beat the shit out of Desiree Peters in that match we saw.
I know, right?
Like, I'd like to see that Judy Martin and this Velvet McIntyre just beat the crap out of each other. It was good. Like, it's nice that Moolah's fucking out of the way. I know she'll still be around a bit, but, like, the women's division, if they were going to have one, really needed some younger talent, right? So we know some's coming, but they need to freshen things up a bit, and they've done it here with Sherry, getting rid of Moolah, get her out of the picture. She's done. The old style with the bin suits and the hair rip and all that crap. Like, that just needs to kind of fade.
Yes.
And I thought Velvet here showed that she could do something with someone that could work with her. Even though Sherry, I don't think she looked great. I thought it was because of her that Velvet was able to work this style and really lay the shots in and move at a faster pace and throw around. Whereas Moolah's, you know, fat ass. You know, she's sandbagging. You can barely do anything. So I think that helped Velvet a lot, too, by having mm-hmm. her in there with someone like Sherry.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think she was motivated to really, on this big stage, because when do you see a six-minute fucking women's match, much less a 14-minute women's match that doesn't
one that didn't drag. Yeah, I mean, it did not drag. It was good. Like, it kept going. It was it didn't feel like the 14, you know, especially because the end was the best part. Like, Velvet, if she had worked at the end like she did, the way she worked at the end, if she did that the whole match, it would have been even a higher grade. She really didn't turn the heat on until toward the end, but she was great at the end. After that slap, it's like the slap woke her the fuck up for whatever reason. She slapped Sherry across the face on the floor and then just, like, was in, you know, 10th gear the whole rest of the way.
Nope, she absolutely was. And a bummer that Sherry retained the title. It would have been cool to have a title change here, but no big deal. But yeah, I give this 2 stars, John. Probably the highest grade of women's match we'll have between now and, I don't know, 97 or something. I don't know, but I mean, I was taken aback by how good this match was.
Yeah, early on, Gorilla and Lord, they were ogling Sherry's attire, her kind of like a spandex. They're like, oh, it looks like a scuba suit.
Think they're Facebook stalking her during the match, maybe.
Yeah. What is that? Not ogle somebody, some woman.
Let me look her up on Facebook.
They're like, we've been watching Judy Martin and all these other pigs. You know, finally we get something to look at. Finally we get something to look at. But I wasn't as high in Velvet as you guys. I think she kind of blew up towards the end. Like when she set up for that giant swing and Gorilla was getting all excited. Like, oh, this is one of my favorite
like
maneuvers.
Twice.
But yeah, she's not even. She did like a half of one. It was more like a Jaya swing, I wasn't as high on you guys, and I didn't like the finish where Velvet, she was like doing some bad acting, like some fake arguing with the ref that allowed Sherry to get it from behind. She was like, "You're supposed to count to three, you only count to two." She was doing was some bad acting, and then Sherry just said, "Hey," she grabbed it from behind, and then just did a little tight pull. Gorilla made it like Sherry did like a big heel move. Well, she barely yanked her tights a little. Yeah. it was like Velvet didn't really look good because it was like dumb broad was arguing instead of taking care of business, and I'm sure he took advantage.
All right.
Sorry, yeah, it wasn't as high in Velvet as you guys, but it was a step up from WrestleMania 2, which is not saying much.
I think it's a step up from just a lot of the matches we've seen out of the women, other than, you know, the Judy Martin one was fun. And on that, we haven't had too much. Wasn't there a Moolah one that was decent a couple months ago? It was, like, kind of okay.
Yeah, Velvet did show good aggression early, but it looked like she kind of petered out towards the end.
Well, then, I mean, I doubt she's used to going 14, too, right? I mean, it was a hard 14. Like, they didn't really stop. You know, they weren't doing, like, rest holds too much and stuff. They were chugging along. So, I'm guessing. I mean, she probably was gassed. Yeah.
It was mostly Sherry selling. So, yeah, Velvet had to carry the action.
Oh, we had that Moolah match with, what's her face? Something Coombs.
Yeah, Debbie Combs. Oh,
yeah. Debbie Combs. But that was a dud, though. That match was fucking brutal.
Yeah, Moolah sucks. I mean, she's trash. Like, as a human and as a wrestler, so I'm fine. I'm fine that she's just about done. Yes. I know we'll see her a little bit more, but she's gone soon enough, thankfully. And not enough to see her for a long time. She sucks. Okay, so let's get to our. Is that it? Everyone good?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right, so before our next match, we are joined by a very special guest, and that is the recently retired Duke Doherty, the Duke of Dorchester. He comes in to join in on commentary. This is actually the only time we'll hear him here at MSG. He'll pretty much become just a Boston Garden house show announcer, I think, before he just ends up disappearing. He was born January 18th, 1945 in Dorchester, Massachusetts. Doherty began his career in the 1970s wrestling for Vince McMahon Sr. in the WWF. At the time, McMahon's territory consisted of the Northeast States. Doherty wrestled all over the small and large venues, wrestling the name the Duke of Dorchester, paying homage to his hometown of Dorchester. It's kind of over there near Worcester. The Duke had a short-lived run as a masked wrestler named the Golden Terror, managed by Captain Lou Albano. Duke used his enhancement talent, the WWF, scored some upset victories along the way, known for his long blonde hair, missing teeth, and wild mannerisms, and of course, constant screaming and banter and all that nonsense. He actually appeared on the Saturday's Main Event, Scott, if you remember, way back in the premiere, lost to the Junkyard Dog. We talked about that.
Yes, he did.
May of 85. Even though he was a heel in 87, the Duke had a short feud with King Kong Bundy. In addition to feuding with Bundy, Duke had several grudge matches against SD Jones and Scott Casey and Lanny Poffo. He got a fluke win after a losing streak over Jones. The announcers alleged had crossed the 300 mark, that losing streak. In the late 80s, Vince put Doherty in the broadcast booth, where he announced several events around the country, but mostly in Boston as a heel commentator, usually along with Gorilla Monsoon or Lord Al or Bruce Pritchard and Mike McGurk around the country as well. We've heard some of that work. The Duke's biggest win, though, came back in the ring. He had claimed he was retired. On July 14, 1990, he pinned Haku at the Boston Garden, and in 1991 was in the King of the Ring tournament as a substitute for Kerry Von Erich, eliminated in the first round. Retired officially in 1987, shows up at random events in Boston, added to the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in April of 2000, and a play based on his life appeared at the New York International Fringe Festival in 2013. So, more than you ever need to know about Duke Doherty, but there you go. Any thoughts on the Duke from either of you?
I don't know, but that was a great Cowboy Senior impersonation you just did, though.
Not a really.
And then,
a fan
and then
of
the Duke met Tom Brady, and everything really was great.
Not really a fan of the Duke.
They talked up his. Well, he had like several retirements, but this last one they talked up his my last match in the Boston Garden where he got a win over Lanny.
Yeah, because he talks about all through the match like, no, I'm retired. He really made it seem like he was done and just going to be doing this. It's interesting why they chose him for commentary. Like, did they really just that desperate for like a C-level or D-level heel guy? I guess I don't know. Maybe they just liked him.
Yeah,
and he just...
yeah, they were scrambling without Jesse. They were just throwing stuff up. They're trying to get a heel commentary. And
you know, he's not that good at it. Yeah, just not.
He
good.
Tried.
Yeah, those Mike McGurk three men were Pritchard, so a classic. Why don't you go bake me a cake?
All right, so he's here for our next match, and that is the continuation of a red-hot feud. Rick Martel taking on Haku. Of course, Martel has issues with the Islanders, and now he battled Tama last month. Now he's battling Haku. Tama is at ringside, and him and Haku refuse to let Martel in the ring. Tito Santana shows up and helps drive the Islanders from the ring, as Gorilla says that Martel and Tito are the new strike force. in the WWF. Duke says the Islanders signed for a singles match, and they have the right to be mad. As Gorilla says, Tito saved Martel on TV and officially formed the team. The referee sends Tama and Tito to the back, and we get some stalling before they finally get rolling. Haku attacks at the bell. Martel fends it off and gets a big crossbody for two to a nice pop. Martel's on fire, unloading on Haku with a hot flurry. Haku catches Martel with his head down, starts to kick away. But Martel comes back and batters Haku from corner to corner. Duke is going basic blind heel shtick here all the whole way, and Gorilla's just kind of playing along with him, where he's just ignoring everything that the heel's doing wrong. Martel eats a hard shot to the face on a charge as we hear the story of Strikeforce joining yet again. Haku chokes away and drops a leg for two. Duke said he won his final match recently and is retired, and he's a man of his word. Haku goes to a seated chinlock, but Martel eventually powers to his feet. Haku stops him with a shot to the back and gets a back suplex for two. Martel battles back with a stiff forearm to the jaw. Haku shrugs it off and shoots Martel across the ring. But Martel leaps off the middle rope with a crossbody for two, and the two trade blows until Haku leverages Martel to the floor. Haku brings him back in with a suplex for two and kicks and chops away before landing a hard clothesline. Martel dodges a headbutt off the middle rope and fires up and starts to lay in some big shots, a dropkick, and a knee lift. Martel keeps bringing the heat, but tries to jump on Haku's shoulders, and Haku falls back and spikes Martel's head across the top buckle for two. Haku slams Martel, lands a huge leaping headbutt for two and a great near fall. Haku then chokes away across the middle rope, but as the ref pulls him off, Tama comes in and smacks Martel with a chair to give Haku the win. Tito makes a save after the bell. Really fun match, as expected. A great flow, no slowing down. There was some fantastic near falls in here, especially late with the Red Sox. Martel's opening House of Fire was really good, too, and I love the finish as the Island is a win and even more heat to an already boiling situation. I thought Tama did a nice job, too, when he sneaks down and hides and just pops out of nowhere to drill Martel with a chair. So I went 3 stars on this one, D'Amato. What do you have?
Yeah, this is the start of a hot feud. The only quibble is debuted in the Duke for this match. They probably should have debuted in a match before because it was kind of distracting, taken away from the hot. Especially this was one of the top matches on the card, so they were kind of distracted explaining about the Duke and his last match, and it kind of took away from the match a little. They probably should have had the Duke come in more at the female match. And all these kids saying, "Yeah, Martel, Martel,
where's Martel going, Gorilla?"
And also looked like the cameraman was distracted too, because he kind of missed the pin there after the chair shot. It was a little confusing that they missed the pin. And then they had like a stretcher out for Martel for just one shot, but he didn't need it. So, but it was a hot match overall, man. The beginning of a hot feud.
Your match time is 9:19. It was a fast 9:19. I also gave it 3 stars. I think it would have been great, Johnny, because I think it would have been entertaining enough to have the Duke do the Natural Force. It could be like, why am I watching these two broads? They should be cooking me a steak. That would have been fantastic. Yeah. And good then the match. Then we probably wouldn't have thought the match was that good. But
this velvet, is she a real redhead?
This velvet.
Does the carpet match the curtains? The carpet.
Oh God.
Oh jeez. So
that's my life. This is my life right now. What I'm listening to.
That's a genius. That's a genius idea to have the Duke do that match. What do you think, Alfred? You would have bagged these two with the Queen?
We gotta head to West Roxbury after this.
We're gonna go to Kowloon's. Oh God. Anyway,
what do you mean she's from Dartmouth?
I thought she was from Malden.
All these fucking assholes from Bracton are coming up here.
Bracton? Let me totally change the vowel. Bracton.
Back to fucking Watertown where you belong.
Bring your horse to Peabody. Now this match, obviously going in, if we remember from last month, this match is different.
What do you mean she's from Somerville? I thought that bitch was from Arlington.
North Attleboro. Oh, God. Anyway, we try to go with every single town in that entire fucking shit state. Anyway. Martel last month took on a
faster, see that game, less... fucking Billy Joe Robidoux banging that fucking broad from Winchester.
Billy Joe Robidoux. I haven't mentioned him yet. He's probably on the Brewers at this point in 1987, most likely. So Tama, obviously younger, less experienced.
I saw Freddie Lynn up in Saugus. Oh, he said he was driving up here from Revere.
Got to go to the North End. So, you know, Tama, younger, less experienced. You know, Martel kind of helped him along, but they ended up having a fantastic match last month. Different case here. More experienced guy in Haku, and as I've mentioned, I've used this term often with him, a blunt force object. He's not a jumpy, fly, flippy guy. He's going to, you know, beat you into the ground like a Ron Bass, only in better shape. So this match goes off a different – you knew that this match is going to be different, but equally as good because Martel obviously is such a great worker. He can handle anybody. So this was more of a psychology thing for Martel to survive rather than have to go move for move with Tama, whereas here he's just surviving getting beaten down by a guy who just is good at bludgeoning you. And it had to go a little faster because they didn't get as much time as they had last month. Right now, Martel, and I think these last two shows have told us this, that Martel is easily a top five worker in this whole company right now.
Bo Vaughn got busted with a stripper over in Holliston.
So thanks. You made me lose my train of thought. So the fact that the work rate in the company is little bit thin right now, maybe mostly in the tag division. Martel's a guy they need to showcase a lot.
I'd argue that the depth is low. I think the work rate's actually the best it's been in a couple of years since like the Piper heyday and stuff. And like,
yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking. Maybe there's a decent amount of work rate. There's just not a lot of guys.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a depth issue.
Yeah. The depth issue is the problem here because Martel is a top five guy and you're having him in a tag team where he could easily be an IC contender or something like that. But anyway, the match is very good. And again, booked differently than he had the month before because he's facing a different kind of guy. My only jive at the end, and I go along with you with this, John, besides the missed pin, we don't get a close-up. We shouldn't have got a close-up of the chair shot because it's evident that Tama hits Martel with the cushioned butt part of the chair. Yeah. And you're thinking to yourself, what the hell is he knocked unconscious? He got hit with a cushion. So probably not the best chair to use. They probably should have used – I mean, obviously those are the only chairs they have, but maybe they could have used something else, the bell or something. Because hitting them with a cushion butt, probably the seat part of the chair probably didn't look that great. But,
and then they brought the stretcher out, and somebody must have said from the back, hey, that looks shitty. Don't bother with the stretcher.
Yeah, don't bother. Exactly.
Martel
won't
bother walking it off.
So. Yeah, exactly.
I saw Billy Buckner down in Andover.
Are you at this point just Googling extra towns in Massachusetts? And
he should have hit him with the chair harder.
Should have hit him harder.
You don't think I don't know these asshole towns in Massachusetts? No, I don't.
Well, I know you know most of them, but you're really we're digging deep into the.
I saw Don Baylor down in Danvers.
Danvers. Got to go to Millbury. Yeah, the ending was a little shaky in that aspect, again, because the camera missed it and because the close-up of a cushion hitting him in the head was probably pretty dumb. But I had no problem with Martel eating the pin here because it just fires up what's going to end up being a great tag feud. Having Martel beat both of them, will just kill the tag feud if Martel could beat both of them. You don't even need Tito then. So Haku obviously had to win this match if you're going to keep
my
the tag.
My name's Brian Bayless. I got to go to Grafton.
Grafton. Where the hell is Grafton? I don't even know where that is.
It's like low South Central kind of.
Oh, God. Where the hell's a cowboy live? Did you already say that town?
No, he lives in Clinton. That's not really a good one to say.
Yeah, Clinton. Yeah, you can't say that. It's just a Clinton.
My name is Matt Souza from Fall River.
Fall River. Oh, that's a big one. Fall River.
All right, I'm done.
Okay. Anyway, so a good match. Yeah, I enjoyed this match a lot. It was a great change of pace from Martel and Tama because obviously Haku and Tama are different kind of workers. And Haku, I was fine with Haku winning because obviously we need to keep the heat hot for the tag feud, which is red hot right now. The crowd was so into this. So 3 stars for me. Same as last month, just a different kind of match. So I'm looking forward to this feud because I think
Oh, Martel Tama. Yeah.
Martel. What are you going to creep into Vermont next?
I blacked out.
Brattleboro. Anyway, Martel, Haku gets, I'll say Martel gets the win. Haku gets the win and keeps the red hot feud going because obviously the big thing here is obviously the Islanders. Hey, look, if we're having heel versus heels in the other, on the other venues, it's not out of the real possibility for the Hearts. I mean, the Hearts faced a heel team, not a good one, but a heel team nonetheless. So it's not a real possibility for Brett and the Anvil to face the Islanders. So this could easily be like a number one contenders feud. No doubt about that. So they definitely got to keep this going. And that's why Haku winning was important to keep the fire going. So there you go. Martel Haku wins in 9-19. Before our next match, JR, which is probably our main event, we do have a big return that Fink announces.
Yeah, we do. And that is Andre the Giant, the very special guest, as he believes he should be WWF champion due to what happened to WrestleMania 3. Andre gets a mixed reaction and just has an awesome presence as he stalks to the ring. Al says he suffered damage to his back and his pride and may have psychological damage. Andre is looking good, and Duke says he should be the champ. But before he makes it to the ring, Andre just gets annoyed at all the fans booing him and just walks out. So we get a lot of talk about Andre. We see Andre, but we do not hear from Andre at this moment. And that does take us to our next match, which is a rematch from our last show. And that is... somebody has no notes on this one here. No, we're good. Okay. And that is the Honky Tonk Man defending his Intercontinental title against Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in a lumberjack match. And this is a rematch from last month, that red-hot bout we talked about with Pete, where Honky barely held on to his title. And we start with the Lumberjacks filtering to the ring as Fink reviews the rules. Honky and Jimmy dance out to the ring, and that's followed by Steamboat, who enters to Cyrus and a huge pop. Cyrus or Sirius? That's Cyrus, right?
Sirius.
Is it Sirius? You sure?
Yeah, it's Sirius.
Yeah,
there's another
like,
I
like
in there?
XM.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's actually spelled like Sirius XM.
Are you sure?
Yep.
I think so, yeah.
Sounds made up.
S-I-R-I-U-S, Sirius.
Anyway, the Alan Parsons song. he comes out to that. And a huge pop. We get some stalling as Honky plays it up with the Lumberjacks. Honky lands the first shot and chucks Steamer over the top, but he skins the cat and then drop kicks Honky to the floor to a big pop. Honky gets pitched right in by the faces, and Steamer chucks him out the other way and heads out, but both get shoved back inside. Steamboat tosses him again and goes outside, and we get a brawl between the two on the floor where the Lumberjacks clean things up. Steamboat goes to work back in the ring, battering the champ as Honky begs off and tries to escape, but JYD shoves him back inside. Steamboat keeps unloading, ramming Honky over and over in the corner, and then rolls him up for two. Honky lands a shot and drops an elbow for one and then kicks away. Steamboat comes back with a roll-up for two and a slam for another near fall. Honky tries to escape again, but the Lumberjacks block his path. Al wonders how long Honky can last at this pace as Duke defends his conditioning. Steamboat gets a suplex for two, but Honky blocks a monkey flip in the corner. Honky works some strikes, but is clearly running on fumes, so Steamboat makes a comeback and lands some shots as well. Honky gets a shoulder block to the gut and takes the challenger down and punches away in the corner. Steamboat comes out with an inverted atomic drop, but Honky reverses a whip and sends him flying over the top to the floor. Honky follows with an axe blow, and then the Lumberjacks push both men inside. Honky grabs a neck vise as the crowd rallies the Dragon, who breaks free and gets a cross body block for two, but they end up colliding heads and collapsing. Honky goes to the middle rope, but Steamboat catches him with a punch on the way down and slingshots him into the top rope. Steamboat slams him and then heads up top and lands a chop, but Jimmy Hart is tied up with the referee, so George Steele, that moron, comes in and counts three, but the ref goes and argues with him now, and that leads to Steamboat beating on Jimmy Hart, which allows Honky to bop him with the megaphone for the win. Tito comes in, and that draws out Ron Bass, and they start brawling, and that triggers a huge fight with all the Lumberjacks. It was a really good Lumberjack match. They worked well within the stip. It didn't get too gimmicky. I thought the Lumberjacks actually kind of worked within the constraints as well. Like, they pushed the guys back inside when they could. There wasn't too much nonsense out there. The crowd just ate it all up. The heat and fire was there for sure. The pace was fantastic. Honky's really raised his stock in this series. And the finish worked too, as it protects Steamboat, but Honky needed to retain. And the crowd was really pissed, which I thought was neat as well. They were really mad at the end of this. I went 3 stars. You could tell they were expecting, because at this point, I don't think it was a given that like Steamboat was done as champ and that Honky was going to have a reign. I think it was believable that Honky made his drop it back after a quick run just to give Steamboat the time off. So I think they were legit pissed when he didn't win. I think a lot of fans seemed like they were expecting Steamboat to regain the belt. So give me your thoughts on the match, guys, and then I have a question for you afterward. I went 3 stars on this one, John. Is it your turn first? Who was up first? Scott?
No, it's my turn.
Okay,
no, it's my turn. No problem. Your match time, 11:06. So I think it was might be roughly the same amount as last month, maybe a little more. I gave this 3 stars as well. I don't think this match – I mean, it was a great match. It was a very, very good match. It doesn't match the energy level for me that the one last month did. I think because Steamboat – the one thing I loved about last month's match is Steamboat came in right out of the gate and just started pounding the shit out of Honky, which is very un-Steamboat-like. Whereas here, you know, all the lumberjacks are on the ring, so they're kind of already starting from scratch. And Steamboat was already kind of, you know, subdued and ready to go. The crowd didn't totally get into it till a few minutes in, so I was a little nervous that this was going to end up being flat, but it ended up not being flat at all. I agree with you 100%, though, JR, on the fact that they thought that Honky was just going to drop it and Steamboat was back to being the IC champ. I definitely think the crowd got snowed on this one and was legitimately pissed. My only problem with the match at the end is, fucking idiot, why did the babyface lumberjacks just pulled Jimmy Hart off the fucking apron and stopped the moron George Steele from counting? Like, all the baby faces stood there like Nimrods and let all this crap go down, and then they let fucking Honky hit him with the damn megaphone. Like, the whole thing, all of that made no sense whatsoever.
I noted the same thing, Scott, especially JYD. Jimmy Hart's supposed to be his mortal enemy for all these years, and JYD's just sitting there, you know, doing rails on the side. He didn't even move, that fat slob.
Because he can't move as fast as he did 2 years ago.
That pissed me off, too, that the heel lumberjacks were just smarter. The Islanders were way smarter than them. That pissed me off, too. So, sorry.
Yeah, no, I
had the same thing, Bounce Scott.
I was just so pissed that they made – why did they let George Steele count the pin? He looks like an idiot.
He's a fucking moron. Steamboat's fatal flaw in his WWF run is that he's friends with George Steele.
I agree 100% on that.
It fucks him around like all these times. You end up getting in the mix with him. The only, it helped him at 3, I guess. But
he should have left him on a high note. He should have left him at 3.
So. Exactly. I agree. The match still is 3 stars. Honky, definitely. Again, JR, something we're learning about some of these guys that maybe, you know, at the top we don't think about. Honky early on here, I think he does get kind of lazy in 88, but this run here, when, you know, I think he's earning his keep, and I think he's looking fantastic. I was very, very impressed with him just as much as I was with Steamboat. But I do agree with you that I think the crowd legitimately thought that Honky was just – won the belt so he could take a couple months off to deal with, you know, his, because he says in interviews that he, you know, his son was born. So I think they just assumed he took some time off, came back, and he's going to win the belt. When it didn't happen, I think, I really think people were legitimately pissed. But, you know, maybe you should have better friends, Steamboat, because the baby faces. I mean, John, fucking JYD, put down the pork. Yeah, exactly. Put down the pork rinds and the rolled up C-note. Pay attention, will you?
Jimmy was up there for like 10 minutes and nobody did anything.
It was idiotic. So bad. So bad. But still 3 stars for me. So, gotcha.
The serious interest, we got to go once again. For those unfamiliar, serious, the Alan Parsons, that's the Chicago Bulls theme.
Yep.
So, yeah, that just enhances Steamboat's interest. It was one of the last times you could see. You can only see it on the YouTube version there. But I think that that Jake was kind of penciled in for these matches, and then Jake either had the injuries or rehab issues. So I think Steamboat was kind of like a last minute interjection just for this run, because he didn't really he didn't really go anywhere around. He wanted to, you know, take time. So I think they just kind of pulled him out for these. But it turns out it was a blessing for Honky, because it really enhanced him. As these matches were very heated, and the Duke was getting all over Steele when Steele's banging on the apron like an idiot, and Duke goes, "Oh, look at him, man. He's obviously a Harvard graduate." So
yeah,
Duke like when you guys first started doing the, like the live watches in the Saturday Night's Main Event and ripping on Steel, I was like, damn, you guys are a little too hard on the Animal. But when I was watching this, and I was pissed. I was like, they weren't hard enough on him. He ruined the whole match. And like we said, the Lumberjack heels were 10 times smarter than the face than the faces.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Honky Tonk Man retains his World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship in 11:06. All right, why don't we take a break? JR, good show so far, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's been a lot of fun. Surprising for this time period. I really was afraid of the summer of 87. It seemed like we said that it was going to be maybe a little light on the depth and whatever reason at the top of the card even. And we haven't even, like we mentioned last week, we haven't even seen Savage on a lot of these shows. And we're getting pretty good work across the board. So that's been a good thing. But it's been really enjoyable.
Was it about – what was the point you wanted to make, Justin? It was about Steamboat or the
You had a question you wanted to ask. You had a question you wanted to ask.
It's actually kind of half feedback from our fan outsider at ProWrestlingOnly.com. He posted this today, and I thought it was a curious question because I didn't think we've actually been this down on Honky Tonk Man. But he said, why does Honky Tonk – unless he's asking from a generic point of view, but I don't know if he's talking to us directly. He says, why does Honky Tonk get so much hate? I understand from kayfabe world you hate the heels. 30 years later, you can't hate his run. He had entertaining and had Iron Sheik heat. In the ring, his work is underrated as well. A lot of stalling and savage honky, but the marks ate up every second of it. I have a similar opinion on British Beefcake over a period. If you're born in the 80s, you're probably a fan. Thank you for the great shows. I look forward to every episode. So thank you, Outsider, for listening. And thanks for speaking up and sharing some thoughts.
Yes.
I actually, when I read it, too, I paused for a minute because I'm like, are we being that hard on honky? Because I know we put over his match with Jake. We've put over this stuff here with Steamboat. If we were shitting on him, I'll walk it back a bit because I have really enjoyed his work since his debut. I'm actually looking keenly to see when it goes off the cliff and like when it becomes too long. Like right now, I don't think we're too long at all. Like I think we're at a perfect spot with him as IC champion, and I've enjoyed him and almost every time we've seen him so far. I've really, even when he was Kimchi and with the Jake Bundy stuff or Jake Kamala stuff was really good. So no, I mean, I think to date, I've actually really enjoyed Honky. So I'm going to give him props. He's on my greatest WWE wrestler ever list, which we'll talk about later. So props there too. John, what's your kind of response to that point from Outsider?
I would say that Honky gets crapped a lot because of his style. He doesn't really have a varied move set. It's a lot of kicks and punches, and especially in his matches, it's mostly selling. Which he's great at, but then again, a lot of it's over the top, a lot of like doofy, like Three Stooges selling. So sometimes he gets a little carried away, and also the finishing move of the shake rattle roll doesn't really look that devastating. So I think stuff like that takes him away, and his offense isn't that devastating. So that's why he gets shit on a lot.
I think it's a couple things. Is he the best worker in the ring? No, not really. But, you know, in this era, do you even bother in that aspect? Because obviously Vince didn't really care in every sense of the word.
This is a generational thing because, like, Honky screams 80s style. That's what you call 80s style.
Nope.
Is a Honky Tonk match.
Exactly, yeah. Johnny. You're exactly right. I think what gave, and I'm learning this now, I think what's given Honky, number one, people love Steamboat and they feel like he was the, you know, and number two, I think the length of the run, and we'll document that, you know, over the next several, obviously, shows. I think a lot of people thought, A, there were so many good baby faces that could have helped with a win, or B, maybe there were even better heels that should have won it instead of him. So I think a lot of it is perception that he wasn't even the best heel in the company. Like, would you've made Harley the IC champ or Hercules? You know, there was probably a better, I'm saying at the time, there
like
may
the
have
rumor
been,
was Butch Reed.
Well, obviously the big Butch Reed. We talked about that, John, on the last show too, about that, with Pete. So there was a lot of pretty decent heels in the company at the time that maybe were more deserving than him. But to Honky's credit, and I could say that now with these last two matches, that he probably thought the same thing. and is working his ass off against, you know, arguably one of the five best wrestlers in the world at the time, and really brought it the best he possibly could. So Outsider makes a good point, and I think that's the best part of why we're enjoying this so much, JR, is because, and John, is because these gaps we're filling are giving us better stories about these guys than just watching pay-per-views or just watching Saturday's main events or even just watching superstars and challenges. Because a lot of these house shows are like hidden jewels that open things up for wrestlers that may have gotten a bad rap for either being shitty wrestlers or crappy heels or bad stick men or whatever. And you've said it yourself, JR, there's a lot of guys that you've opened up to, a couple guys that you didn't – there's another guy in particular that you've really gotten high on since we've been watching the shows. I'm trying to remember who it is. But anyway, but Honky's a big one because, again, all this time we thought he was just a flunky who sucked in the ring and just siphoned heat off everybody else. When in reality, maybe by 88, I'd have to say easily maybe by the spring of 88, maybe he starts to lose the vigor a little bit. But we'll get there. We'll dive more into that. At least that's what I think now. I may change my opinion after watching at that point. Who knows? But to answer Outsider's question, I think a lot of it is watching these shows fills the gaps of how good these guys really are. And a guy like Honky, whose reputation was dirt before then. I hated Honky for a long, long time. He's still not one of my favorite guys. Would I put him in my top 100? Probably not.
Come on. Like, he didn't make your top 100, Honky Tonk Man?
No, he didn't. I would have put him like – he was probably like my –
I've seen some of the scrubs you have on that list. That's insane.
5, 106. you know, you're fucking unbelievable. You really are.
What?
I mean – never mind. I'm not even going to get into it. I'm not even going to get into it because I'm just going to pummel you. So I'm not even going to – I'm not even going to get into
was
it.
Was Jinder on
it's
your
amazing.
List?
It's amazing. Why don't we just take your fucking list and make everybody's list yours?
I think Honky's a pretty fair one. It's not like I'm
come
picking,
on.
It's not like I'm saying Akeem.
SD Jones made it, and Honky did it?
Yeah, SD Jones, he made it, but not Honky.
Oh my God,
SD
really?
Jones, a much shittier version
no
than Honky.
You had no fucking problem with it. No. You had no fucking problem with SD Jones for the last like 6 months. Now suddenly Honky, you're marrying him, and suddenly SD Jones is trash. I'm not getting into this with you right now. That's the point of our.
This will be STD Jones. That's how much I'm fucking avoiding him.
Jesus Christ. Everybody, well, let's just take JR's going to release his list. Everybody, just copy it, and then everything will be great. And the rest
it
of
all
us
over the
to
world.
Worry about. Yeah, exactly. And then the whole last 8 months would have been for naught. Let's take a break. When we come back, we got the rest of a great card. We got one match that maybe isn't so great. And some great interviews and a main event that's going to make you, you know, punch the wall and want Honky on all 100 slots. Who knows? But more after this, because
I got a vibrator named Ron Renzi in the car. I got to drive it up to Norton to get it signed by Noma.
Boss sucks.
Stomping over
harder.
Both of you. Stomping all over my shit.
You know, actually, though, I think they advertised that the Lumberjack was the main event.
We always confuse the Lumberjack with the last match.
It's the Lumberjack match.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Scott Keith, the former Net Cop, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we're back. I hope Scott's cool off here. We're taking a look at the August 87 MSG House Show. Getting all hot and bothered over the honky-tonk man. And but earlier, you know, obviously we were talking a little bit, just a little bit about Massachusetts. Mentioned Mo Vaughn, if you remember, was actually here in Providence. That he visited the Foxy Lady quite often, quite a bit. Well known for his dalliances in the Providence strip club scene. And he'd walk in and say, you know, who's that girl over there? And you get all fucking excited. And often, I'm guessing the song that's playing underneath us right now is maybe playing in the club at that time, because that is the number one song in the country here this week. And that leads us to Scott Criscolo in the Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And I wonder where he went, Johnny, when he went to the Mets. I'm sure there were plenty of good ones in Corona or, somewhere on the 7 line. Anyway, yes, who's that girl?
La Officina, I heard.
La Officina. I do remember that one.
Or was it La Cucina?
Yes. A lot of movie songs on our top 10 this week. This is a Saturday, so the new list came out today, and the number one song is from a movie. It is Madonna. It is Who's That Girl? The movie itself is not that great, but this song is actually very good. So that's number one. Number two, another song from a movie. It is La Bamba by Los Lobos.
Yes. Did we talk about that?
Yes, we did.
I know.
We talked about
kidding.
Los Lobos. Because it came out.
Like 20 minutes, yes.
Well, yeah, the movie came out. Today, the song is number two, Los Lobos with La Bamba. Number three, one of the more underrated one-hit wonders of the 80s, Luca by Suzanne Vega. My name is Luca. I live on the second floor. Number four. A yacht rock state. Well, I wouldn't say he's a staple. He's on occasionally on our channel. Little Richard Marx. Don't mean nothing. And it don't mean.
By the way,
nothing.
Have you caught the new Rafferty song that's on there? Island.
No, he has a new one. He has a new one. He's dead. He had a. They had a third one. I thought it was only the great one, and then the one you hate, and then. Oh wait, no. There's
Island.
I
don't know. This song Island. I've heard like a bunch the last few days. I hadn't heard it before. I don't think so.
Okay, because I know there was three songs. There was obviously the iconic Baker Street. Then there's the other song. Right Down the Line, which you hate. And then there's a third song they played a lot. I don't think it's on the same album. And then this song Island. I'll have to listen to it. It's not the song I'm thinking of. They play a third song from him, too.
Right Down the Line.
I know, it's not as good as Baker Street. From the same album, though. Number five, another song from a movie that I didn't realize till we talked about it last month, and that was I Want Your Sex by George Michael from the Faith album, but apparently it was on Beverly Hills Cop 2. Johnny, I guess Pete said that it was in the strip club scene?
You would, anything with you porn or strip clubs, Pete is there. Like, was it? There was something in the chat today where, like, Pete hadn't been there like 3 days, and someone mentioned something porn-related, and he immediately came in with the correction.
That's because the sheriff's in town.
Yeah, he's the best.
Oh, God. At number six, a song that would not play at a strip club, at least in where Jay, or if any of us were there. I still haven't found what I'm looking for by U2, JR's big favorite band that SD Jones loved. No. Number
I'd
seven.
I'd rather rank SD Jones number one than listen to a fucking U2 song.
At number seven, our girl Debbie Gibson. Only in my dreams.
Nice. From Merrick, Long Island.
That's right. She was from Long Island. I totally forgot about that. Yes, she's number seven. Number eight, Rock Steady by The Whispers.
Roxy.
Rock Steady, rocking all night long. Great song.
Whenever I think of that, I just think of, like, my dad was in this. I'm looking back, it's probably some sort of fucking Ponzi scheme.
Oh.
No, he was in this, like, insurance game fucking company that sold insurance. Like, one of the big ones that ended up folding. But they had, like, all the tiers and the levels, and you get promoted, you know, as you moved up, then you got people under you, and your RVP and SVP, and they'd have these fucking parties for, like, every level you reached. And I just remember, because this is the height, it was probably 87, 88. And I just remember Rock Steady being, like, one of the songs that always fucking played at, like, these parties that we were at. Just picture them all step-touch dancing with the fucking song playing. It's like all I can picture when I hear that song is these ridiculous parties for this insurance company.
Number nine, a song we had all talked about, another great one-hit wonder, T'Pau with Heart and Soul. Come on, John, that was a great song, too. I like that song. And number 10, Michael Jackson, I Just Can't Stop Loving You with Sleeta Garrett. I have no idea who that is. I don't even know this song. Interesting. Anyway, there's your top 10. A lot of movie
Sleeta
songs.
Sleeta Garrett backwards is Macaulay Culkin.
What's that?
Nothing.
It's Macaulay Culkin. So your number one song for the week is Who's That Girl by Madonna from the movie of the same name. Hmm. All right. Three movies came out last night or the previous Friday, the day before. All of them fairly well known. One of them very well known. In fact, it's probably one of the most iconic movies of the decade. That came in number one. At number three, this made $17.35 million. It is a comedy called Born in East L.A. This is what I'm thinking of. It's actually very funny. That's the word I'm thinking of.
Cheech Marin, yeah.
Yeah, it was Cheech, right? Yep, there you go.
Yep.
Rudy Robles is told by his mother to pick up his cousin Javier at a factory before she leaves for Fresno. Robles arrives shortly before immigration officials raid the factory looking for illegal immigrants. Because he's carrying no identification and his mother and sister are not available to verify he's a citizen, Robles is deported with the undocumented immigrants to Mexico. Ironically, Robles cannot speak more than very simple Spanglish, though he is fluent in German from having served in Germany and the U.S. Army. Starring Cheech Marin, Paul Rodriguez, Daniel Stern, Kamala Lopez Dawson, Lupe Antivaros, Tito Larriva.
Tito Arriba.
Tito was in it.
Tito Arriba.
Eddie Barth.
I think it's Robles. I don't think it's Robles. Robles sounds German.
he was in Germany in the war. That's probably where he picked it up.
That's Robles. You picked it up.
Hansel Robles. We can report him.
Yeah. Nut job. Anyway. Hansel. So, yeah, that was number three. Number two movie made $17.68 million, a thriller suspense called The Big Easy. I actually remember this movie.
I hope so. The Big Easy. You're alive. All right. The Big Easy. Remy McSwain is a New Orleans police lieutenant who investigates the murder of a local mobster. His investigation leads him to suspect that fellow members of the police force may be involved. Ann Osborne, a state district attorney, is sent to investigate alleged police corruption after seeing firsthand some unorthodox practices by Remy and accuses him of being on the take. Starring Dennis Quaid, Ellen Barkin, Ned Beatty, John Goodman, Tom O'Brien, Mark Lawrence, and Bob Kearney. amongst others. Solomon Burke.
So,
hang on. Solomon Burke as Daddy Menchin.
I thought you were going to say a murder in New Orleans. Yeah. Suspects include three guys in a carpool.
Do you rank Daddy Menchin much higher than Daddy Walsh?
Daddy Walsh. Oh, Daddy Walsh. High on the list. No gifts. Yeah, that was the first thing I think Ellen Barkin was ever in. The first thing I remember her ever being in anyway. All right, here we go. The number one movie of the weekend, and probably, again, maybe the number one movie of the year, it made $63,852,000. And I'll just use one quote from the movie to tell you exactly what it is. Because nobody puts Baby in the corner.
Ace Ventura.
That's a couple years later. Dirty Dancing.
I almost said nobody puts Greeny in the corner before.
Too much research.
In the summer 1963, 17-year-old Frances Baby Houseman is vacationing with her affluent family at Kellerman's up in the Catskills. Baby's younger of two daughters and plans to attend Mount Holyoke College. Oh, not Mount Holyoke.
Not Mount Holyoke.
To study economics in underdeveloped countries and then enter the Peace Corps. Her father, Jake, is a doctor and friend of Max Kellerman, boxing aficionado, and pardon the interruption, the resort profiteer. Baby's befriended by Max's grandson, Neil. Baby develops a crush on the resort's dance instructor, Johnny Castle. Baby encounters Johnny's cousin, Billy, on a walk through the resort grounds and helps him carry watermelons to the staff quarters. The staff hold secret after-hours parties to what song?
What's that song? Do you love me?
Very good. Very good. Not bad. I think is that the name song? Now that I can dance. The staff holds secret after-hours parties in their quarters. Baby's surprised by the dirty dancing. They engage in. Intrigued, Baby receives a brief impromptu dance lesson from Johnny. Starring Jennifer Grey, Patrick Swayze, Cynthia Rhodes, Jerry Orbach, Jane Bruckner, Jack Weston as Max Kellerman, Kelly Bishop, Max Cantor, on, and Wayne Knight as Stan Newman. Great movie, of course, Dirty Dancing. I've seen it many times. It was not long after this that I spent a lot of time at my grandparents, and my cousin Melissa and her parents lived downstairs. It was a two-floor house, and she would force me to watch this over and over. So I've seen Dirty Dancing probably more times than any 37-year-old male should have, but I had those hungry eyes. What can I say?
That's right. And we'll have plenty of the songs from that soundtrack as over the coming a couple of months, because that soundtrack blew up with more than one song. Great Goldberg's episode, by the way, too, about Dirty Dancing. So there you go. Dirty Dancing was the big movie of the weekend, and clearly one of the top movies of the decade. All right, Major League Baseball. It is a Saturday, August 22nd, 1987. So all teams in action, and both our teams playing West Coast teams and did not do so well. Yankees were shut out in Oakland 6-0 by the A's, while the Mets lost 8-3 at Shea to the Padres. Your division standings at the moment, a virtual tie between two teams whose fans are big Place B Nation podcast hosts. Kelly Nelson's Toronto Blue Jays, Joel Barnhart's Detroit Tigers tied for first in the AL East. The Yankees are 4 games back. The Brewers are 8 back. In the AL West, the Twins holding on to a 2-game lead over Oakland and 3.5 over Kansas City. In the NL East, the piece of trash Cardinals lead the Expos by 4, the Mets by 4.5. And in the NL West, it is a good race, actually. The Giants lead the Astros by 0.5 game and the Reds of Cincinnati by 1 game. So, hot tenor week.
But it was that summer that young John D'Amato entered his freshman year of college.
I prefer
going to Mount Holyoke.
Banging some whop in Mount Holyoke.
I prefer Land of a Thousand Wrestlers.
There you go.
Ragoni Maroni.
I'm going to stretch from here to Mount Holyoke. Cynthia Rhodes, by the way, for those that don't know, she was the one in the Toto Rosanna video, and she was in sadly dreadful Saturday Night Fever sequel, Staying Alive.
Richard Marx, right? That's who he married.
Yeah, he married. Oh, look at that for symmetry. He's on our top 10, and he marries what's her name?
My sister got hepatitis up in Canton.
Hepatitis at my Holyoke, whores. All right, there's your pop culture corner. All right, we got. Does the Duke have any interviews?
Yes,
we do have plenty of interviews, JR. As we take this, we're in the intermission here. What do we got?
Been in the mission for quite a while, since 2011. Gorilla's backstage with Duke Daugherty, who explains what his commentary style will be like, and also, of course, criticizes Gorilla. Gorilla's chatting with superstar Billy Graham, who's posing, as Gorilla says that this is a man who is never supposed to walk or wrestle again. Gorilla talks about his vendetta against Butch Reed, thanks to a cheap shot that almost took him out again. He withstood the pain and agony and was able to rise again and take out the Natural. Gorilla then chats with Butch Reed and Slick about their bout with Billy Graham, and they say... And then they move on. They talk about Billy Graham telling him he should consider retiring instead of wrestling tonight. Slick has a big-time Jerry curl going on, by the way, and says, Monson again, which is awesome. Reed calls Graham a crippled old bum and says this is Billy's last hurrah.
I'm going to beat that bald head till it grow hair.
I think it might have been Reed's best WDF promo. It was fantastic. Oh, the delivery on crippled old bum was – I popped big time.
Crippled old bum.
Crippled old bum.
Gorillas with George Steele and JYD talking about their match, and they put over how great Demolition has been and says Mr. Fuji's a big part of that. Steele does Steele things as usual, and JYD talks about what it's like to be working in a team with the Animal. So that brings us to our next match, and that is superstar Billy Graham taking on the Natural Butch Reed. It's our first time seeing the superstar in action here at MSG. Scott, born Wayne Coleman in Phoenix, Arizona, June of 1943, shot put champion in high school, dabbled a bit in professional boxing and amateur boxing before getting into the pro graps game. Of course, also did some bodybuilding, worked out with greats like Dave Draper, Franco Colombo, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Through that, ended up getting into wrestling, trained with Stu Hart and Stampede. Debuted in January of 1970 in a match with Dan Crawford. Wrestling briefly under his real name, traveled back to the U.S. in May, wrestling Dr. Jerry Graham, Brick Darrow, and others in Arizona before he and Jerry Graham joined the NWA's L.A. promotion as a tag team. Changed his name to Billy Graham there as a tribute to the famous evangelist of the same name. Wrestled in Florida as well, worked his way to California, and that's where he developed a new aspect to his character, where he would stage an arm wrestling contest before his matches, encouraging public challenges to his title of arm wrestling champion of the world. Moved on to Minneapolis in the AWA, where he took on the name Superstar in 1972. Toured the North Central, feuded with Vern Gagne, the Crusher, the Bruiser, all those guys. Integrated his performances out of the arm wrestling, but also weightlifting challenges as well, involving Ken Patera. In late 1974, took a leave of absence from the AWA to join the IWA Super Wide Series Tour of Japan. Was there for a bit, went to the NWA, worked his way around, showed back up in the WWWF, made his debut in October 1975 in a tag match at the Boston Garden, in which he and Spiros Arion defeated Bruno and Dominic DiNucci. Took on the Grand Wizard as a manager, went to the NWA in Houston for a bit. Then in the WWF, of course, in April of 1977, he returned and defeated Bruno Sammartino for the WWF heavyweight title in April of 1977 in Baltimore, held for 9.5 months, wrestled all over the world, had a match with Harley Race, who was the NWA champion, and then was defeated by Bob Backlund, of course, in 1978. Stayed around, had a feud with him for a while. Disillusioned by the loss, though, he ended up joining Houston with Paul Bosch for a bit and then went back to the IWA, worked around some more around the country, went to the NWA again, back to the WWF in September of 82, where he had the weird karate pants and bald head and mustache look. Vince Sr. would not let him become a face, so he got pissed off because he wanted to retire the superstar character. Destroyed the title belt, challenged Bob Backlund for the belt, was unable to win it. Of course, a lot of that's been chronicled on Titans of Wrestling, so check those shows out. Left the promotion again, went to the AWA, back to the NWA, through Florida, all over the place. Of course, was on some of the early well-known NWA Crockett shows. I believe it was on one of the Starcades, right? Is it Starcade 85 he's on?
Yeah, he has an arm wrestling match with Barbarian, and then I think he wrestles Barbarian. I think it's both on the same night.
Okay, yeah. So he comes back in June of 86, finally as a face in the WWF. After a few appearances, though, he had needed a hip replacement surgery, so it knocked him on the shelf. Had that surgery, where we saw footage, actually, of it on TV in September as a means of promoting his comeback. Returned in mid-87 and worked a heavy schedule from July to October. This is his first MSG match in 4 years. Any thoughts before I just – so I get a drink. Any thoughts of Graham's return here, John? Like, what did you think? Was it too little, too late? Did you think he had some juice in the tank? What did you think of Billy Graham's comeback? And we can talk about the match in a minute, but what did you just think in general of his comeback?
Well, he looked great, and he still had the classic promo ability. I mean, we could argue a top three of all time, top five of all time, but he still had the gift of gab, and he looked great. But as we're going to see, what happens once the bell rings? Has age, and you know, the hip has taken its toll, and you know, we're going to see the answer to that, which is not so good.
The official date, since you said it, his last match in this building, I looked it up thanks to Mr. Cawthon, historywwe.com, April 25th, 1983, he lost – he jobbed to the Superfly, Jimmy Snuka. You could just see by the way he walks. I don't think he had any business being in a ring. I'll get more into it when we talk about the match itself, but they should have found another role for him. Other than being in the ring, I just don't think it.
He did look great though, Scott. Especially
he looked awesome. He looked in shape. He looked good
when he was last seen in the karate pants, which was
he looked
hideous. Yeah,
that looked atrocious. But I don't know what Vince Sr.'s thing about him not turning. I know it was tough. I always said, and he says it in his on his DVD, and I kind of agree with him. I thought they should have turned him face after he lost to Backlund in 78. Yeah. I think that would have been a good move for him. But Vince, I don't know about making him the champion again, but at least make him a babyface and face some of the – maybe him and Dusty as a team. That would have been pretty cool, actually. But instead, Vince Sr., old school kayfabe. You need, you know, Mr. Appleton, Minnesota there, clean cut and everything else. But I think that was a missed opportunity, honestly. I mean, watching a lot of his matches, a lot of the 85 NWAs that are on the network, I mean, even before the hip surgery, he didn't look good. You could definitely tell that time and medication, and I'm being generous, I'm being nice there, cost him a lot. But we'll get more into the actual match itself. But no, John, he looked fantastic. Looked is in big, good shape, could still, you know, work the stick like nobody else. That stuff was fine. But as we'll mention, he probably should have just been somebody's manager or something. But it was cool to see him back for the working the stick. It was good to see him back anyway from a historical perspective. But as we'll talk about now, that probably is where it ended. But go ahead, Jer.
Yeah, I do think he looked great as well. And I do agree that 77 was time to be faced. By the time we got to the early 80s when he came back, he looked like shit. He was all pilled up out of his mind. And again, I really recommend the Titan shows from that period. Like they cover a lot of the Billy Graham stuff.
They do. They do. Yeah.
They go in good depth in it. And it, you know, it's pretty funny, a lot of it, but, you can get really caught up on Billy Graham's failed comeback during that show. So we get a big revenge match here. Billy Graham, Butch Reed, big moment too, is Billy Graham steps in the MSG ring for the first time in a while. Slick without a hat tonight, showing off that Jerry curl, like we mentioned. Graham enters as Jesus Christ Superstar, gets a huge pop as he ambles down the aisle. Al says he's the Miracle Man. And Duke says he may have big arms, but he has no brain. Reed attacks as Graham enters, but Superstar fends off and hammers away. Graham stalks Slick and grabs him in the corner, but releases to fight off Reed. Graham slugs Slick to the floor and stomps away at Reed and then grabs a sleeper. Slick hands a foreign object to Reed, and the natural pastes Graham in the gut and head with it. Reed starts to kick and choke away as the Duke demands Natural get some credit. Reed starts to target the hip as Graham rides on the mat and mixes in some chokes as well as a shot from Slick. Reed goes to a seated chin lock, but Graham powers up and Reed yanks him hard back down. Graham fires up again and this time breaks the hold, but Reed knees him in the hip to take him down.
Reed keeps working the hip and cuts off a comeback, but Graham eventually comes back with punches. Graham shoots Reed to the corner and dodges a charge on a reversal, and then Graham shoots Reed upside down into the other corner and kicks away. Graham grabs a bear hug, but Slick comes in with the cane for the DQ. The crowd pops big as Graham grabs Slick and chokes him in the corner, but Reed makes a save. Graham fights off both men until he grabs Reed in a bear hug. And this gets crazy here, as he just locks on the hold, and a whole bunch of officials, including Gorilla, who's been positioned as Graham's friend through our commentary, come in, and they finally get him to break the hold. Better than I expected, but Reed basically wrestled himself, especially late in the match. I mean, this was like a broomstick match for sure. He was just out there bumping around and really pushing through this himself. Graham is really limited, but he just still has great presence, great charisma. The comeback probably was worth a shot. Like, looking at him here, even though he clearly can't do much, he still demanded your attention in the ring. And I thought Reed looked better here too than of late. These guys can only do so much out there. I do think Graham, you mentioned him as a manager, Scott. I think they could have maybe hit him in a tag team as well if they paired him up with someone as like the mentor to a young guy.
I can see that. Yeah, sure.
Because I think he had enough to come in and like work a hot tag maybe, you know, or whatever. He just didn't have enough in the tank to wrestle like long singles matches. So I went one star on this, which I was expecting a dud. And I thought Graham was actually pretty fun, despite not being able to move. I don't know who was first, whoever. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, John.
With Billy, that's about the best they could do. I mean, you're going to get the ring entrance. Is going to get him half a star. He got a monster pop and coming out to superstar, and that's what you're going to get with rest holds and just gearing up for that big bear hug spot. They did the best with what they had to work with. He still has amazing presence, but in the ring is severely limited. And also the hugest pop of the match was when Gorilla came in to break him up. The crowd went bananas. That's no pun intended there.
Well, and I mean, he must have got a lot of Jerry Curl on his tuxedo. I mean, Slick was like prime AC Green on this
yeah,
night.
He was lubed up.
Johnny remembers. Yeah, or Johnny remembers another great guy, Michael Cage, played for the Clippers. He was
that was what popped the crowd. He threw an elbow and he shoved Slick with an elbow. Yeah,
everybody got blinded by the oil. I gave it.
Say it looked like that coming to America. Okay?
Yeah. I gave it a half star. Anything other than the actual work rate was great. The entrance was great. His presence. Look, the guy's a former world champion. One of the first great personalities of this era. But I get throwing him out there and giving him a shot. But Butch Reed was probably not the guy that you're probably do. And yeah, Butch Reed did bust his ass to do the best he could under the circumstances. Your match time, 8:56. The ending was cool with the not letting go of the bear hug, and that kind of added a little extra juice. I didn't want to give this a dud, but I got to be honest. If the ending didn't happen that way, I might have given it. I mean, it sucked. Billy Graham just can't. I mean, he can't even. I mean, he can barely walk. You know, I mean, it was rough. It was rough. To see him look like this. I mean, it was not good. And Butch Reed, to his credit, you know, tried everything he possibly could. I also think Butch Reed should have actually won instead of this crap finish. I don't know what they thought for Billy Graham, but he should have put over somebody. I don't know. But anyway,
you think so?
The entrance was
I'm
great
with him. You think he should have lost here?
Depends what they thought their future plans were.
No,
I mean,
I think they were planning on pushing him. No, I mean, it's like they. I mean, he was. You know, we'll see. He's supposed to be part of a big match at the end of the year. So no, I
would have given him. Maybe you give him somebody like I don't know. So, I hate to.
But this is the
I
feud.
Know,
I mean,
was still.
No, I don't think there's anything else you could do.
Scott, had all those. They had all those vignettes where they filmed the surgery. They weren't going to do all that and then just have him out there and be a JTTS. So you had to at least give him a couple big wins or at least keep him competitive.
Yeah,
I'm sure once they saw how limited they were, then they had to switch gears. But at least for the first couple of times around the horn, they had to. that they couldn't bury him right away.
No, probably not. I mean, I have to say that the ending with the not letting go of the bear hug really added some juice. And
yeah, I like that
maybe
a lot.
That's where the star comes in, because the rest of the match is just garbage. And
I thought it was impressive by Reed, though. I mean, I gave him the bump for that. Like, I thought he was working his ass off in there against himself, especially at the end. I mean, he's just going nuts, bumping all over the place. You could tell maybe he really had some respect for Graham or liked him, because he was really working hard to make him.
Yeah, for somebody that can barely move. And Billy, at least he physically, he looked the part.
Yeah,
he did.
He looked great. At least. And the presence and the charisma was there too. Like, he felt like a big deal when he came out. Like, I was expecting to just be really annoyed in this match, and I got sucked in when he came out. I'm like, that's the pull he still has when he's coming out there. I was like, fuck, you get what people are talking about. You know what I mean? Because, like, he comes out at this point of his career, and he's just like, shit, he still commands the room. Like, when he comes out, it's still, you could tell the MSG crowd was into him, even though maybe there was some turnover from when he was a big deal. But he, yeah, I mean, you could tell that they were very happy to see him. You know, it was very.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and all of the ancillary things work out. I just it was making me nervous, because even like Irish Whips, he was like, you could tell he was like favoring the leg, and it was
it was rough.
But yeah, the histrionics and the energy level did help in that aspect, and I'll give the half star to Butch Reed and to that ending. But the match as a whole just was it was evident that. That, as you said, the shelf life of him in the ring is limited. I think a tag team might not have been a bad idea with the right guy. It might have been possible, but that was a rough one, John. You go. Yeah. Oh no, you went right. So there you go. The match ends 8:56. It's now a double DQ, so we'll see if they do see if we get a rematch down the line. But if they do, maybe they do some kind of gimmick or something to protect both of them.
305 lives.
Graham from hurting himself and Reed from hurting him. So, All right.
Now we go to Deuce,
next.
Yeah, we got poor bastards have to come out after the last two matches, and that is Lanny Poffo, the supple one, taking on Jose Estrada. Just a nightmare scenario for these guys and for us. Estrada continues to hang around. Poffo shifted from openers to filler late in the card. If you've noticed of late, you know he's no longer working the opening match. He's here before the main event, crammed in. Lanny has some extra frisbees as a thank you, and he tosses those out. Estrada attacks at the bell, lands a nice clothesline, and then a pair of fists off the middle rope. Estrada keeps laying it in as Gorilla notes that the Duke has taken off. Poffo still hasn't gotten his jacket off as Estrada's all over him and loves him with a dropkick for two. Poffo finally catches Jose with his head down and disrobes before hammering away. Estrada leverages Poffo to the floor as Gorilla says Estrada was on a tour to Australia, New Zealand, South America, and Al said he had a good record while away. Estrada cracks Poffo as he comes back in, and Al says Lanny's resilient, known for how he can move his body into all types of positions. Oh, well. Estrada misses a knee drop, but Poffo can't take advantage. And Jose maintains control as the crowd turns on the match. Poffo lands a few kicks and right hands to turn the tide as Gorilla talks about the Pan American Games that are upcoming. He was, like, super into the fucking Pan American Games. He gets all hyped up for it. Poffo takes Jose over with a head scissors and then hits a standing drop kick. But Jose blocks a second one with a knee lift. Gorilla shits on the ref for talking to the wrestlers so much as Poffo mounts a comeback. Jose dodges a springboard backflip but comes up empty on a charge to the corner. And Lanny slams Jose and then hits the somersault splash off the top rope for the win. Fine outing, some stiff basic offense, and good timing by both. It wouldn't stand out as special, but it didn't overstay its welcome either. It never got meandering. Considering the spot that they were in on this card, I actually think they did okay, and the beat just kind of goes on for both guys. I went one star on this. Like, I thought it actually wasn't too bad. Now, what'd you think, Scott?
Well, according to Graham, Poffo was actually pinch hitting for Chavo Guerrero.
No,
so, I don't even think Lanny was even supposed to be here.
No, you know what he wasn't? Because I remember last month, when he ran the card down, I think he said Chavo Guerrero. I remember him announcing that he was going to be there. Yeah.
So Lanny's pinch hitting here, mom hair and all. Your match time 7:42. I mean, I gave this a star. I mean, that's really all this is just fill till this last match. There's really nothing more to do here. Not much more to say. Simple TV fare. I don't know if I feel like Lanny is getting less motivated now that he's just some guy, you know.
I think he's been better than he's been. I don't know. It's just me. I think he's actually been pretty good.
Well, I had said, I had said that he had that he had, and he kind of did a cool finisher. I like the sit down flop over the other move, but I had said that Lanny had gotten more aggressive over time, and I think he continued to do that. But yeah, this was just, I mean, simple fill before we get to the last the last match. Probably could have ended with this. I think it would have been fine. I'd have been fine if this. Well, we'll get to the main event in a minute, but or the last match. But I mean, this is just simple fare, John. I wouldn't say much of anything else here. Just a simple kind of fill in between. Yeah, it was meant for Chavo to. I mean, it was honestly, it was obviously meant for Chavo to have a stage, you know, at the Garden and everything. And with him not there, then this match really means nothing.
Lanny was really up against it because the crowd for his matches, they get more tepid each month. And this time he didn't even have the poem. He must have ran out of poems because he didn't even give one.
He just chucked the Frisbees out. He was like, fuck it. I'm
yeah,
not doing
yeah. Gorilla and Owl were like, oh, he brought extra Frisbees. You know, he didn't even he could have come up with something. Hey, never stayed. I've been beaten like a clock. But the only thing I'm good for is sucking my own.
I wonder if that was on the Frisbee, the diagram.
He could improvise something. You know.
Fucking Al, though. Oh, my God, what an asshole. He's yelling he's so for limber. Getting himself he's into different limber. Positions. Yes, he gets himself into different positions.
Very limber.
Too much. All right, we're done with that? Guess so.
Please.
All right, we go backstage where Al is with Demolition talking about their big bout tonight. Smash as Mr. Fuji has given orders to demolish their opponents, and Axe says the animals are going to be cleaned out tonight. Fink then runs down the card for our next match, bringing us to our final bout of the evening, and that is Demolition taking on the Junkyard Dog and George the Animal Steel. Demolition continuing to work up the ladder. Interesting bout here as JYD, of course, is coming the other way down the ladder very quickly. Steel's barely hanging on too at this point. The demos clearly need some fresh meat to beat on, so this wasn't the worst idea. Demolition come out angrily to their rock riff, and that's followed by Steel and JYD coming out to grab them cakes. Gorilla puts over the continuity of Demolition, but wonders if the animals will have any at all. We get some stalling and messing around early on. Gorilla notes that JYD has put on 15 to 20 pounds of late, and the dog starts off with Axe, who slams JYD to open things up. JYD dodges an elbow, and then Steel catches Axe in the corner and bites his face, leaving the animal with paint all around his mouth. Steel tags in and jumps around as Smash just stares him down. Axe and baits Steel into the corner, allowing Smash to clobber him from behind. Smash tries for a clothesline, but Steel catches the arm in his mouth and takes a bite out of it. JYD tags in and starts to work the arm, but Smash works free and tags Axe, who takes over on the chin lock. Smash makes a tag and works JYD over with a knee lift, and then the demos keep quick tagging and double teaming where they can until JYD and Smash run into each other with a really awful double clothesline. JYD makes the tag, but the ref was tied up, so he blocks it. Steel comes in anyway, and things fall into a big brawl. Steel gets dumped outside as the demos blatantly double team. Steel comes in behind the ref and jabs a chair to the ribs of Smash. JYD covers, but the ref calls for the bell, and we get a DQ to end this fucking awful mess. Just completely sloppy, no flow at all, really disjointed. Maybe a little bit of a bump due to the heat, but it was real ugly and made nobody look good at all. I thought it was a tough way to end what's been a really, really good night. I went a half a star on this, again, just because of the heat and the presence of Demolition. But Steel and JYD are both on their really on their last legs. I'm not going to say it's the worst idea to team them up and let them job, but I would not give them any kind of preferential treatment off of anyone. What'd you think, John?
Yeah, you said it. Let them job, but what happened? They were protected. Yeah. I mean, you're putting out Demolition. They should at least put them over.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, to see Animal in two matches, come on, guys.
It's too much.
And Gorilla said the quote. Yeah, Dog has put on 15 to 20 pounds, and it's only to his advantage. Mm-hmm. I don't think so because.
It's to the advantage of fucking Shoney's. That's about it.
Exactly. It gets slower every month.
Daisy Mae's barbecue.
Yeah.
And well, the crowd doesn't seem to get sick of it, but come on, you know, with Steel's antics, like he was like hypnotized when the demos had their masks on.
He's just played like out. He's just done. You know, I was done with him a while ago, but he's really cooked now. He's got nothing left.
Yeah. Sadly, though, the crowd still kind of responds to him. So. Yeah. You can see why they still threw him out there, but yeah, this is a mess. But one thing you notice for the finishers, this is a very heelish night. Hardly any of the faces went over, other than Leap and Lanny. it was the heels got the victories on almost all the matches, which is very rare because usually they send the crowd home happy. So it was a rare night as far as those type finishes.
Your match time is 6:10, which is about 5:40 too long. Why, for the love of God, are we protect? I mean, I can understand JYD not eating the pin, but why, for the love of God, is we just? What is George Steele set for a Hogan? What is he going to turn heel and face Hogan? I mean, fucking job. Exactly. I mean, for God's sakes, it makes no. I mean, I don't get it. I contend that I would have put this match two matches up, and I would have had, believe it or not, even though I trashed the match like crazy, I would have had Butch Reed and Billy Graham end the show.
End it, right.
Yeah, they should have done that.
I think the heat was great. Was the match great? No, but it was no worse than this. This is garbage. I mean,
unless it is
no
figured.
Looks.
I mean, yeah, it's not even like. Yeah, I can see if they felt like JYD is still a name draw, but I mean, you're ending on two real shit matches, and I know that wasn't meant to build the card that way. The middle was always kind of the heat. But with Honky Steamboat before the break and then rolling right into Billy Graham, which was like hot, and then nothing after, you were really setting up for a real, real just kind of flat crowd at the end. So I think it would have been better just to move these two up a slot or have this coming out of the break, then Poffo, and then Billy Graham would have been a good way to end it.
Yeah, that's rare because usually they send the crowd home happy. So
yeah, no, it's total garbage. George Steele should have
job. Yeah,
George Steele should have eaten the pin. Clearly, Demolition is meant for better things. Top tag team down the line, and they can't even get a clean pin against these two mooks.
And it wasn't like you guys didn't see it before. You remember last year when they set up for the Kamala match, they had Kamala give Steele a good squash, and
yeah,
so they did it before. So
I don't get it. It's just utter nonsense, absolute nonsense. Ruined the end of the show. The match sucks. And I would have flip flopped, and at least you have this nostalgia of having Billy Graham last.
Yeah,
that would have been really cool.
Well, yeah, and even though he didn't win, you still had the bear hug spot, which would have been a hot way to end the show. You're getting a DQ here anyway, so what the fuck is the difference? You know, you might as well end with the hop brawl with Graham just killing Reed
exactly.
with the bear hug.
Exactly. No, there's no doubt about that. So crap ending. I gave it a what did I give it? I think I gave it a half star too. Yep, I gave it a half star too. Just utter crap to end the show.
All right. Bummer. Well, let's hit up the awards to close things out here tonight. So first up, we have our match of the night. A couple of contenders here. Really, I think I had three matches at three stars, but I really enjoyed Tito Bass the most. I thought that was the most surprising. It was the hottest of the three, even a little hotter than Steamboat Honky. And I think Martel Haku was real good too, but it was kind of the most basic of the three-star matches to me. The other two had a little more juice to them, but I thought Tito Bass was the most fun for me on the night. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I agree. I really liked Haku and Martel, but yeah, I think, again, out of the surprise of the fact that we didn't expect Tito and Bass to be that good, I think they deserve the nod, so I'll give them match of the night.
What'd you have, John?
I concur.
Okay. All right, the Cousin Junior for the worst match of the night. I think very easily the last match, which is crazy because, I mean, I thought we were careening toward like maybe a great card when you saw that even Poffo and Estrada was a star. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I thought that would be the worst match, and then we got the last match, which is awful. Yeah. You guys both agree?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'll even give – just because of the Billy Graham of his presence and the whole – bear hug ending, at least save that a little bit. Nothing saved that last match. It's terrible.
All right. The MVP, the Hogan Award. If Graham had had a little bit more in the ring, I might have gone with him because of his charisma and everything about him. But I ended up going with Tito. I thought he was just awesome in the opening fire segment and then his comebacks and his selling and everything about that match. I thought he was tremendous on this night. And then you also get him with the Strikeforce stuff later too.
Yeah, I mean, I would give it to both him and Ron Bass, but if you had to pick one or the other, I'll go with Tito too, because he took such a good beating, and then came out and kind of fortified the Strike Force union. So I'll definitely go with that. I'll go with Tito, John.
Yeah, Tito with honorable mention to a Steamboat, although his lumberjacks kind of
let him down.
But,
yeah.
All right, the Uncle Elmer for the worst wrestler of the evening. I want George Steele. I thought he was fucking terrible.
Every single time he was on camera, he screwed something up. So, yeah.
Yeah, he screwed up two matches, sure.
All right, and the best moment of the night, I went with Andre the Giant coming out. I thought that was pretty great. The heat was great. The crowd was super into it. It was booing the shit out of him. The way he looked around and just walked off, like, fuck you, I'm out of here. And we never hear from him again. I thought that was really well done to keep him kind of in our minds during this layoff. There's a couple other really good moments, too, on the night, but that was my favorite.
It was pretty solid. I thought the bear hug at the end. I thought the bear hug moment at the end with fucking Gorilla chucking AC Green there. I thought was pretty good too. But just Andre, just the look of just utter disgust on his face was. Andre played it up really well, really well. I'll go with that. But I did like the post match bear hug at the end with Gorilla chucking Slick.
No,
that was
really
pretty
good.
What do you got, John?
Yeah, no, you hit it, Scott. I like the Gorilla moment, especially the crowd really popped for it. When he threw that elbow at Slick, I'm going with that.
All right.
Okay.
Gorilla saves Graham. Okay, so our Juice Award, our CD Award for the biggest roided up dude. I went Billy Graham on this one. I didn't think there was much of a question.
Fucking poster child.
On this night.
Superstar.
Yeah, he was fucking loaded. My lord. All right, so we're all in agreement there. So overall grade, it's an interesting show. There's not a lot of down matches, really. But there's nothing that was like great to carry. It was just, everything was pretty good, like between 1 and 3 stars. And we had 3 matches of 3 stars, which is really good on one of these shows. Had some really fun moments, some decent commentary. So I went 6 out of 10. It doesn't get that bump to like the next level to like the real peak MSG shows because it didn't have that, you know, that real banger of a match like the Tito Valentine, something like that. So I need one of those to really go to the next level. But this is like pretty much as a topped out MSG show that doesn't have a great match grade for me. So I give it a 6 out of 10, Scott.
Like I gave last month's show 6.5 and I thought last month's show was really, really good. This show was really good, but maybe a notch below. I'm going to give it a 6. Mm-hmm. The 3-star matches were all really good, but other than the pomp of Billy Graham, that match was not great. And that last match is just fucking trash. And there wasn't anything on July's show that was nearly as bad as that. So I'll give this a 6. It's a good show. Not as good as last month, but definitely had some good moments, John.
I'm going 5.5. It was heel dominated, so there weren't too many feel-good moments for the crowd. But the matches were entertaining and very surprising. But overall, I go 5.5 because Steele and JYD dragged the 2 matches down and dragged the card down in general.
All right, well, there you have it. Another MSG show in the books wrapped up for tonight. Next week, Scott, we will be back. We'll be Martin Luther King Day weekend, but we'll still be here as usual on our Monday night to work in the holiday. Kelly Nelson will be back in the house with us. We'll be looking at the September 21st, our final house show of the stretch of 5 that we're working through until we get to mix things up a little bit. We have some interesting guests coming as well in the coming weeks after next week, too. Not that Kelly's not interesting, but different guests. Be sure to check out all of our feeds each and every day. Of course, PlayStation Wrestling, where you get shows like this, and also soon to be coming is our content around the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project. The first honorable mention portion of the list dropped today, so check that out at ptman.com. Anyone who received at least one vote is getting recognized with a post. So 331 wrestlers got at least one vote in this project. So not only are we releasing the top 100, you're going to find out everyone up to 331 as well. So be sure to check that out. I believe 331 to 275 dropped today.
Yes.
Those will continue to be scattered out over the next couple of weeks. And along that will be various audio. Scott, I'm expecting you to do something here.
We will.
Me and Aaron are going through our entire list as well in pieces. So check that out. Of course, stay tuned to our social media for news there. You can check out what else do you have anyway, by the way, Scott, before we move on. Do you have a main event coming up?
Yeah, we do. Before we do that, though, I want to compliment a great written piece that kind of is a compendium to our podcast. Our research expert, Mr. Jason Greenhouse, did a great piece today. If obviously a pay-per-view will be debuting in 1988, but he wrote a great piece today complimenting this house show. If there was a SummerSlam 87, which he had chronologically would take place the following weekend, I think that following Sunday. So listen to our show here. When you're done listening to this, check out his piece, If There Was a SummerSlam 87. It's actually it's exceptional. I highly recommend it.
It's always nice.
Yes, JR.
It's always nice to have a couple supporting each other.
That's just like you and Cowboy. Yeah. Actually,
Aaron. Aaron's my new worker.
Yeah, I was going to say Aaron, actually, but yes. Although Aaron and I did a podcast from his car, so beat that. Speaking of Aaron, I think he'll be –
we did one from bed together. How about that?
Anyway, yes, I've already talked to my compadre in the main event, the Godfather, Nate Milton. Him and I will be doing our own breakdown of our top 100, probably going pieces of 10, so that'll be pretty good. Speaking of, we will have a new main event this week. It is the Year in Review 2017. Myself, Nate, I think Chad will be joining us as well. Maybe I'm pretty sure Steve Willey will too. And we will break down 2017 all over the world. WWE, Ring of Honor, New Japan, Impact, everything. Best shows, best wrestlers, shitty wrestlers, crappy shows. All the big awards we're going to have. And we will be this may be a between the sheets length main event because it is our next New Japan Classic Match Pick segment. And the match we did was Antonio Inoki versus Andre the Giant, speaking of Andre, from Sao Paulo, Brazil, December 15th, 1974. Chad rolled his eyes, but it was actually a pretty good match, and we're going to give you our thoughts on it this week. So a pretty hefty main event coming up this week. It'll probably drop Wednesday night / Thursday morning.
So. Yeah. All right, so check that out. Looking forward to that, of course, the revamped main event. Mm-hmm. Check out our Pro Wrestling Only feed, too. Great shows popping up each and every day there. Some new Strong Style story, Strong Style history, greetings from Allentown, and many, many others, of course, on that feed. And then the PlayStation Nation Pop feed as well. We mentioned the Star Wars recap episodes last week. Be sure to listen to those. They were really well done. Glenn Butler and Steve Willey did their advice episode of the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular. That's a must listen. Hard Traveling Fanboys had a big roundtable. It was live in person with a whole bunch of the comic staff. They looked at the best comics movies of the year. Geek and Sassy, of course, is on that feed as well. I believe they have a new episode coming. So check out all of that. Each and every day on the PlayStation Pop feed as well. Of course, I'll be remiss to mention the NBA team too. Adam and Andrew still chugging along on that show. And I honestly made 3 or 4 years at this point for them. So good on them to keep this thing going and delivering great NBA content here as well. So check out all those feeds. Check out PlayStation.com, Facebook.com/PlayStation, Twitter is place number 2B Nation as well. PlayStation.com/Amazon. Do all of your shopping with us. And check out our free Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks. You just go to the right-hand side of PlayStation.com, click the link. They're available on Barnes & Noble, on Smashwords, and on Amazon completely free. You can download those, and you can get our recaps, whether it's Raw, Saturday's Main Event, the pay-per-views. They're all there. They go up each and every, whatever, few months or so, maybe half a year, as we work through the shows. And all those reviews are also on PlayStation.com, too. So check all that out. That's it for John and Scott. I'm Justin. We're out. Talk to you next Monday night. Everyone else, take care.
Peace.
I gotta get back to Worcester. I'll be here later.
What a nice surprise to open up the GWWE honorable mentions. The first one is Uncle Elmer and his pig of a wife Joyce.
Look at that fat slob Uncle Elmer.
Limited
my schwanz turtle from 2 1/4 to 2 inches.